practice a day, and we know that members correctly so are conscious that on Friday we should be sensitive to requirements. I suggest we start. Is it okay if we start? Thank you very much, honourable members. Just before we start, three points that I think I must bring to your attention. The first one, honourable members, you'll recall that when we departed yesterday, we had agreed on a method of work for today, namely that we were going to receive either email or in hard copy the contributions that members had volunteered, discuss them, and then put them in the report. That was the plan yesterday. Subsequent to that, there was a request for a reconsideration, and I solicited the views of most political parties, except maybe for you, Honourable Mukwena. But the request, Honourable Members, is that we table the contributions that we were supposed to make, and I'm going to ask if that has been done, but that we don't discuss them as the first item. We will table them, we'll put them in the report between now and when we give you draft two of our draft, and we'll consider them on Tuesday, and then when we consider everything else. So that's the first proposal, that we go straight into observations and recommendations. So I'll want to solicit members' views on that one. Is that okay if we... But as we do that, if there's any member that still hasn't honoured his commitment to give us a copy, you should indicate that as well. But if everybody has given their copy, that's fine. But then let's talk on, is it okay if we change the work programme? Mr. Swartz.
No, Chair, I support that. We need to get to the observations and recommendations. I tabled two documents. The one was prepared by the legal department, which I'll present next week, on the application of the Companies Act or Broadcasting Act when it comes to this removal of board members. And I'm deeply indebted to the legal department for that. But I would suggest members try to read it over the weekend, and it will be inserted, as you say. And then the suggested insertion regarding the Auditor General's final management report as on the issue of whether the SABC is a going concern. So that's another two-page document, and that obviously is an important document as well, bearing in mind the comments we made yesterday about the Auditor General. So we need to be sensitive to how we deal with that information as well. So that has been tabled. I support your recommendation, Chair.
Honourable Koza?
I support it fully. Thank you.
All right. There's consensus that we move in that direction? Thank you very much. yes, Ma'am Fanda?
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Waters and I submitted some additions on legislation which we think will inform the recommendations that we will discuss later. So I don't know if you'd like us to present that, or should we keep that for Tuesday?
If I open up for you, I'll open up for everybody else. What I suggest, honourable members, is that if when we get to the recommendation observation part, you put a recommendation observation that strengthens or weakens this, you can just allude to the fact that it was related to something that is new information and not information that's currently here. And when we get that document, we'll first of all look at that information, see if it marries the observation and recommendation, and we can always come back on Monday and discuss it, because remember, it's still in draft form. Otherwise, it means we're going to go and do what we had initially planned to do, and it'll take us the whole day. But let's see how it pans out, and as usual, we are flexible. If it affects the way we work, then we might have to change, but for now, I'd rather that if it is going to affect the recommendation, you can always say that it might not be here, but it's a proposal that we are bringing to the table. I hope that's... We'll see how it works as we go along. having said that, then, Honourable Members, just so that we are all clear, the changes that you have made or contributed will be inserted in what we're now calling Draft 2, but it'll be very clear, either highlighted or emboldened, that these are contributions that we need to come back and consider as a committee, because it would be a task team or an individual's. So when you get the report on in preparation for Tuesday, it'll be very clear which areas have been areas that we still need to revisit in terms of getting general consensus. That's why I'm happy that we have agreed then on the work program. The second issue, Honourable Members, you recall that on Friday, there were specific requests made to Ms. Shabalala to supply us names, and insisted that comes to us on Monday. We've received those, and I consulted with the legal team. What Ms. Shabalala did was to send us correspondence. I don't want to say an email, but she sent us correspondence that is not in affidavit form. And secondly, the correspondence that, or the information that we required in terms of elaborate, has not been forthcoming to the extent that we thought it would be forthcoming. For instance, she continues to say political parties without, and I think we had asked for names. So it has been a bit vague, as opposed to saying Vincent, John, and Paul, in instances of the political parties, in instances of, or it says something like some prominent politicians, most prominent political parties. There are other instances of certain board members, minister's advisor, and not saying advisor Vincent Smith or whatever the case is. So the suggestion after the consultation with the legal team was that we humbly request that this be, in the first instance, reduced into an affidavit form, because she was, and give her the deadline again of ASAP, because to reduce this document into an affidavit form shouldn't be too long. And then we consider it, as we will consider all other written recommendations, or not written recommendations, all other written evidence. When it can come back in affidavit form, because then it's a continuation to what you've been saying under oath. So the first thing is to state that we have received it. In consultation with legal, they think that it should be an affidavit form. I need your comment on that one, because we don't want a situation where Ms. Shabalala says, in fact, I've sent it and you guys haven't considered it. So members must comment on how do they think we should take it forward. But she has indeed sent the document. Honourable Chauke, anybody else? Anybody else? Or does everybody want to speak on it? We don't all have to. If everybody wants to speak on it, no. Then Chauke Swartz, you wanted to say something, sir? Honourable Swartz? Yeah. Chauke Swartz. And Koza.
Chair, no, thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair. The fact that till now we don't have facts from what Ms. Shabalala raised here, you remember from the start of my input then, the issue that I raised was, tell us, give us even the names of those politicians that are interfering with SABC. If by now, Chair, that has not come forward, I'm not sure that we have to entertain this thing. We just have to put it aside. It's clear that she was not able to substantiate the allegations that she made under oath, and I expected that that will come obvious with a statement that has all those details inside. But it's clear that she's not providing us with information, and I'm not sure why must we entertain it. I want to propose that we just put it aside. We'll treat it as one of those allegations that were made during the hearing. There's no need really to be pushing on something that the truth is not coming out. There's no truth, I mean, there's no fact, in fact, into what she's presenting. So my proposal is that let's just put it aside. It can just form part of the list of whatever that we have identified. Or we just totally reject this whole thing. I mean, there's no need to deal with this thing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Swartz.
Chair, the issue relates to political interference, and it's a very important issue. And she actually raised it in response to my question to Dr. Gabbani, where he said there was no political interference. She then indicated there was gross political interference, and then we asked questions. So it's a very important issue. However, the fact that she hasn't complied with what we requested with specific names does taint what she said to a certain degree, but it doesn't distract from the fact that she said here before us that there was political interference. And I think, whilst I agree with Mr. Chalker to a certain degree, that evidence still pertains to us that there was political interference. So I think we need to bear that in mind. What we do with that document, it's not an affidavit form, but we can still just consider it as part of all the other written submissions we've received. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I concur with Honorable Swart in as far as the issues that she has raised, because they obviously raising issues like around political interference. However, Chair, I've had to think about the party, this particular witness. I'm not sure how other members found her, but I really, really found it very difficult to believe what she says. And the grounds for that is that she chose to mention other names, and she chose not to mention other names. And I suspect that even in this case, she's very inconsistent in terms of what she is bringing out. And Chair, the other thing that is worrying me is that we may actually be opening ourselves up to a situation where people who are lacking credibility in any case want to redeem themselves by using this platform. This is somebody who has not regularized their qualifications, and now we wanted to elevate her and think that she can give us something credible. I'm really, really not sure about that, Chair. Regarding reducing her submission to an affidavit, probably we can ask her to do that so that at least what she is bringing in can be considered. But as far as I am concerned, really, Ms. Shabalala is not credit worthy. And whatever she is doing, I suspect that she is using this platform to redeem herself, and I don't think it's the correct platform in which she should be redeeming herself. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I'll recognise everybody. Can I just make an appeal that we play the ball rather than the man, because the people are not here to defend themselves. That's all that I'm asking, but I'm not stopping you from saying what you want to say. But if you could just caution on that regard. I had noted Singh, Kubisa, Loliwe, Waters.
Thank you.
No, it's fine. It seems like everybody wants to speak on this matter. Yeah? All right, let's take Singh, Kubisa, and then Waters. Yeah. All right. Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for allowing us to speak on this matter. I think the fact that we're having such a discussion on it, a protracted kind of discussion, every witness who comes here must literally put their money where their mouth is and not shoot off their mouth without being able to substantiate whatever they've said. So in that context, I want to agree with you that we give the person an opportunity, write to the person to say, if what you've said there is the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, reduce it to an affidavit, which we will consider on Tuesday. and we leave it at that and we see what happens from there. But let's put the ball into her court for now. Thank you.
Kubisa, Waters, Loliwe, Killian, and the last one would be Honorable Masango.
Yeah, Chair, first and foremost, I agree with the whole notion of her giving an affidavit. And also, to us, this is a very important evidence because we must make sure that at the end of the day we come with strong recommendations. So I would believe an affidavit would suffice. Then also, this committee also notes or noted that when she was giving her evidence, she was pickling forward and backward. Why I'm saying that, you remember in the first instance, Chair, she mentioned a name. Then when you made a follow-up, she somehow skirted without going back to the name she mentioned. I think that kind of a dilly-dallying, peckling and forward and backward situation should be reduced to an affidavit so that the affidavit will then be a credible document. Thank you.
Chair, Mrs. Shabalala was under oath when she presented to us, so what she said in front of us we should take at face value. If she did mislead this committee, then you know there's other avenues you must take, and you've talked about it yourself. But she did mention one name, and that was Honourable Minister of Higher Education, Mr. Bladin Zamandi. She mentioned his office. That she had a phone call from his spokesperson, I think it was, that said that the minister wanted to support a certain deal or that's going through. So the fact is she did mention one name. She refused to mention other names when she was pushed. So we've got to take the fact that another minister was mentioned, and we've got to take it seriously as well. I mean, it's political interference. It is why the SABC is in the state that it currently is in. It's because of political interference. And I'm not saying that the Honourable Minister of Higher Education is the only person or whatever, but we have to take that allegation seriously. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm worried about how this witness treats this committee. We have time frames to adhere to, and she's aware of that. When she was requested to submit evidence with names, first she requested extra time, and when that extra time was granted, she is still bringing back to us something with no names. Furthermore, when I probed further when she was here on the issue of the Minister of Higher Education, she reverted to something different to say it was not the minister, it was somebody in the office. She was not sure whether it was a spokesperson or a deputy secretary, because it means she was not sure. That's why as this committee we have to be vigilant. We can't take something from her which is not in affidavit form. She must reduce that into an affidavit if she stands to what she is doing. But I want to appeal to us as a committee. Her delay in submission should not deter us from meeting our deadlines. Because as you are to write to her, she may take her own time to bring this back. So it must not stop us from concluding our work because we are still having this. And I want to put this input of hers on this issue of political interference on that basket with contradictions, because other witnesses were saying there was no political interference and she said there was. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I briefly mentioned this yesterday, that we have to be very careful when we assess specifics that we call for. When a witness is here, they are protected in terms of the law. They've been sworn in, etc. When they submit any evidence after they have left the chamber, they are exposed to litigation. So I think it is in her own interest that whatever she puts before us is in the form of an affidavit. And she must come with the evidence that we've asked for. We didn't ask for any other stories, etc. We have plenty of that we have to work through. But we need an affidavit from her. Secondly, I just want to say that I concur with some of the members of the committee that the appearance of the witness before this committee was not in all respects without some shadow of doubt about the truthfulness of what was reported. First of all, when asked whether the interim report of the public protector was tabled in the board and whether it was discussed there, she said yes, it was. When we inquired and we said, did we understand you correctly, she again said it was. However, if you go to the report of the public protector itself, it is evident that she admitted to the public protector that she never tabled that report in the board. Now, clearly, that is therefore a contradiction with what she told this committee. So therefore, we cannot consider anything but an affidavit that she signs when she submits it before us, because we must hold her accountable to what she is telling this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I associate myself with my colleagues, and indeed the last matter that Member Killian has raised, the contradiction between the information that went into the public protector and evidence presented by other witnesses and her contradicts. So I think it must form part of it. But the issue that colleagues have raised here, and I think we must clear that matter up, because I know Member Loliwe raised it, I think Member Khoza raised it, and I also raised the same question because it wasn't clear. The issue, I know she mentioned three parties. She mentioned the ANC, the DA, and Minister Blade Ngubane. Nzimande.
Okay.
When we probed, and I know the colleagues, it was contradiction. When I asked her, because I think towards the last, I asked, Madam, did you say Minister Nzimande called you? She said, no. I am not sure whether it's an official from her party, the SACP, or whatever. So it's a very hazy witness, content, the issues that raised. Well, because we are not in the court of law, we wouldn't throw her evidence out as unreliable. I guess we can see how far we can go, but I think it leaves much to be desired. Let's give it a try, Chair, and let's see where we go, but I have my own doubts about the credibility. I mean, if she contradicts herself here, nobody had asked her. She volunteered Blade Nzimande. And when questioned, she jumped off and said, no, SACP. I mean, why did she mention Blade Nzimande in the first place? Just that kind of a thing is very unbecoming. I don't know what it means, but yeah, my view, if I had things my way, I would say throw her evidence, all of it out. But indeed, colleagues are interested in the political interference. Well, let's try and see how far we can go.
Chair. I'm not sure that, Chair, we want to create something that is not there. The fact is that, yes, I understand it's an item that we have to deal with of political interference. Why do we want to persuade a witness to bring something that the witness does not have? Because if that information that is before us has a detail that we expected, definitely I'll then push that, let the witness put it under a particular statement, you know, under oath. But clearly there's no detail. Why do we want to keep on engaging on this thing that does not have a detail? The position that I think we should take as a committee, club that information within the rest of the information that we have received. And it must be noted that she was given an opportunity and she did not come back. And we leave the matter there, Chair, because why do we want to create a dialogue between ourselves and witness that was never in fact honest from the start in the engagement, with even responding to questions that were put before that witness. So my position, Chair, is that we put this aside, please let's proceed and look at other serious matters that we'll have to deal with. It is noted, the issues of political interference is noted, but without proper facts that are put forward by a person that says that I'm ready, I'll give you the names, clear with clear timelines that were given by the committee, there's no need really to proceed with such issues and create unnecessary dialogue and engagement with the witness that we have given the opportunity, and if the person has failed, why do you want to insist?
Now you need the wisdom of Solomon, I guess. But just to clarify certain things so that it's clear, even this affidavit doesn't talk about the Minister of Higher Education. It says a certain official. So let's clarify that. In her interest, she didn't say the minister, she said a certain official from the SACP. So I just wanted to clarify that so that there's no ambiguity or she or anybody else put under the spot. But honourable members, would there be harm in us asking her to reduce whatever she wants to reduce in affidavit form, and only at that point will the committee consider it? And then when it comes, we will take a decision. No, Honourable Chauke, no. I hear what you're saying. I'm saying there were two options put on the table. I hear Chauke's option that says, whatever we have, just note it, adopt it, and put it in the pile that, remember we're talking about the Singh pile. Yeah, in the Singh pile that we'd look at. That's the one option. The other option is to afford her an opportunity to reduce it into affidavit. Now, as always, I want members to decide. It's neither here nor there for me, because we still have until the 24th. I mean, the other reality, honourable members, is that, remember that from the 24th to the 9th, people can still comment. From the 24th to the 9th, they can still comment on whatever is in our report. So it's not like we're opening it or closing it. Even if we said, now, let's take it and throw it in the dustbin, nothing stops from presenting on the 24th. So I think the middle road is to say, let's get that affidavit, and when we consider stuff on the 24th, we can consider it if it's worthy of considering. I don't know how members feel. Or do we go with the Chauke route and say, it's here, we table it as is, and we consider it? Ma'am?
I would like to reiterate the point that we can't just table it, and, you know, it must come back in the form, because she was a witness. She undertook to give us additional substantiation of what she said, and further, she couldn't mention the names here. She wanted to not mention it. We then said, submit it in writing if you don't want to bring it here, you know, in the open. So now she was afforded an opportunity, but if she is coming with the names, etc., clearly to protect her, etc., it must be in the form of a sworn affidavit. She's not just a member of the public. She was here as a witness. Therefore, we cannot consider anything but a sworn affidavit. Thank you.
Can we close it at this note? Thank you. What we will then do on this matter is that we will write and take all the points into consideration, including the time frames, that we will not continue, but we will give us strict time frames, ask her to reduce it into writing, and as with all other documents, it will then be tabled to the committee formally at that point. Is that okay? So for now, it's work in progress. From Ms. Shabalala, it's work in progress. We will write, Cindy. And once a affidavit has arrived, we will, as with all other documents, share it with you. Acceptable. Thank you. The final issue that I wanted to raise, honourable members, you'll recall that we made an appeal to the media in the morning to assist us. We then made another intervention round about lunchtime or just before that in terms of a tweet that went out from one of our colleagues from the media subsequent to that, I had a interaction with the said colleague from the media, who explained that the tweet sent out was done in good faith. There was no malice, and all unintended consequences apologies, want of a better word, yes. She apologizes if there was anything that was done, it was not done in malice. I have taken it in good faith that we asked colleagues, I don't think anybody said they're not going to do it. People have apologized for their mistakes if it was a mistake. And I think let's leave it at that. And as new developments happen, we can take it from there. But I just want to table the fact that the said individual apologized. And I'm appealing that we accept the apology. Ms. Van Damme, you want to say something?
Chair, I mean, I would accept that apology if it was followed then by... she tweeted that, you know, she's recognized that she's made an error. But after that, she tweets, SABC inquiry politicians now dig into ANN 7 and TNA past. Clearly by attacking me, it is part of their agenda today against the Guptas. So it is her firm view that she still holds that this committee is here to drive an agenda against the Guptas. So for her, me, her apology holds no water. She was caught out in a lie and she was left with no choice but to apologize, but it's quite clear that she views this committee as nothing but an attack on the Guptas. In fact, earlier on, at the end of last year, she also put on social media that she views this committee as nothing but a regime change motive run by factions of the ANC and the DA. So her apology for me, not accepted.
All right. We're not going to open up a debate. I mean, there's sentiment all over, but for the record, it has come not only verbally but in writing, where the member, not the member, where the said the said colleague did apologise. Members might have a view whether they accept it or not, but the record would show that she's apologised. And let's move from there. I don't think we need a side fight about that thing. So thank you very much for having apologized, colleague, and it has been tabled as we undertook to table, and let's move forward in the spirit that accurate and fair reporting will continue to be the order of the day. Having said that, honorable members, let's get down to the business of dealing with the recommendations and with the observations and recommendations. Can I make a proposal, honorable members? I was doing this before other things got hold of me. I don't know how many observations there are. I didn't count them, but there were quite a few observations, and somebody somewhere I read had indicated that there are about 20 or 30 recommendations. I don't have the whole of 13. Right? Recommendations are 13, isn't it? No? Observations are 13, and recommendations are from 14. Yeah. So there's almost 7 pages of recommendations and a few pages of observations. 39. So I want to make a proposal, honorable members, that when we, and we're going to go as we did yesterday, when we do the observations, not recommendations, when we do the observations, would it be in order if I asked every participant not to talk to only observation one and then we go around and observation two? In terms of observations, if you just try and club the observations, when we get to recommendations, we do recommendations line by line. Would that... Otherwise, my fear is that we'll spend another 3 hours just on observations, another 3 hours just on recommendations. Those are the two options that I'm talking about. If we want to do it in that fashion, I don't have a problem. But I thought on observations, if we said, Ma'am Van Damme, you've got 7 minutes, talk to all the observations and zoom in on those that you want. But we can't do that with recommendations. recommendations, we'd have to go recommendation by recommendation. That's one option. The other option is that we go as we did yesterday. Observation one, observation two, observation three, and so forth. So those are the two options. Which one? I'm talking just on observations at this point. Recommendations, we will revert to as we did it last time, because those would need thorough debate. Let's take Mr. Singh, just on how we want to deal with the observations, option one or option two, and then we'll take Mr. Mokwena.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I note that the observations in this draft report are in subsections. So maybe we should deal with them in subsection by subsection. But I just want to raise a point on the first subsection, fitness of the board. I mean, are those observations, draft observations that are listed there, do they speak to the fitness of the board? Do they speak to the locus standi of the board? And which board are we referring to? So we just need to look at that heading, the first subsection.
Okay, there's the proposal that, what I'm hearing you saying, Mr. Singh, is that you wouldn't have a problem if you went section by section, but clearly this is speaking to the board as it existed when we started this report. Remember that Prof. McGuve was there, and there were three executive board members. So technically speaking, there was, even if it was incorrect, but there were three people or four people that were members of the board. So that's who we're talking about. And the question was, were those people in a collective, not individually, was that board fit? And if we say yes, why? If we said no, why? That was how we tried to craft it. But it's talking about the board as of the, I think it was the 16th of November, when we constituted this committee. So that it's clear to everybody, at that point, there was the CEO, the CFO, the COO, plus the chairperson. Everybody else had resigned. So that was the question that we were asking, because others were no longer board members. And Mr. Singh is saying, we then do section one, or the board, then we do the whatever the case is. That's the one option. Let's hear what Mr. Mokwena is saying, and then Mr. Kubisa. Do we go line by line, or do we go section by section? Honorable Mokwena.
No, Chair, I concur. Section by section, each and every person makes all their observations, and then we'll collate all of them, yeah, when it will save time.
If once we know that which one, then we'll agree on the time. Honorable Kubis?
Yeah, Chair, I was saying no, yeah, I agree with the area of doing it section by section, but also I feel there is no harm in allowing a member to speak broadly on the observations, yeah, all of them, and if there is any submission that the member might want to make to you, that's fine as well.
All right, we'll be flexible in how we do it. Honorable Kota, you're the last one.
Chair, I was just thinking that it might be useful if we give members like sufficient time, whatever that means, say maybe 5 minutes or 6 minutes, to comment on all the observation on all the key areas that are stipulated in the report. And some members may actually want to speak more on a particular issue, on a particular section. And I think we are going to be dragging this unnecessarily if we allow every member to speak on each section. Let's rather take it as a whole. And the person is going to speak on those issues that they feel very strongly about. They may indicate which section they are going to be focusing on, should they wish to adopt that approach.
All right. We always ask this question, honourable members, because we don't want one person to dominate. We want to be as fair as possible. I think that was the principle. I was counting, we 11 members, will be 12 with Kwankwa, because I should have said earlier on that he put an apology joining us later. So there will be 12 of us. If everybody speaks, and if we take the approach that we speak per topic, then we must, whatever time we give people, we must give them times 12 around the recommendations, and similarly with the observations. I'm cognizant that around about 3 o'clock, people are going to start running away. And that is why I'm saying it must be about fairness and it must be about adequate time. So let's take Singh's section that says section by section. But I'm just asking members to be cognizant that there are 11 other people other than yourself, so that we don't dominate. Is that okay, honorable members? And we'll take it as it comes. Is that fair? All right. If that is, then... I beg your pardon?
Section by section, should I not want to comment on a particular section, can I bank my minutes for the section that I wanted to comment more on?
No, no. Honorable members, look. You know the other thing that I'll do? Is I'll say that you've got until 11 o'clock for recommendations, and then you'll be done, or 11:30 for recommendations, but then people will accuse us of things. You know, when we back minutes, it's going to be very difficult. We don't have timekeepers here. I'm just asking members to be cognizant that there will be 11 other people who'd want to comment. And my proposal is, if we're dealing with Section 1, Honorable Waters, and you have nothing to say on Section 1, you're not obliged to talk to Section 1. If we go to Section 11 and you've got nothing to say on Section 11, you're not obliged to talk to Section 11. That is going to help us save time and give members more time to discuss it. Can we do it in that fashion? Mukwena, you'll be the very last and I'll take a decision.
Yeah, no, I think Honorable Khoza, being a member of the ruling party, which has more time during the sessions there,
that's
she can't claim, you know, she can't want more time here. Thanks very much.
You guys must discuss that there. All right. What we're going to do is to deal with observations. And we will then, for instance, say the matter on fitness of board. And you talk about even the heading. Remember, these headings might not even be appropriate. So people will talk on fitness of the board or whatever heading we want to do. No, if you don't want to say anything about it, we move to the next person and you will then speak where you want to speak. The first section, of course, is fitness of the board, and then the next section is role of the shareholder. And I'm hoping that we've addressed what we mean by the board. Remember, our mandate was, is this board, and it was the board as when we were instituted. If people want to talk even to the heading, that's it. Just to indicate once again that we will revisit this thing again on Tuesday. So whatever we say today is said on Tuesday, we will then have to fine-tune it. So members will be giving their observations. We will try and reach consensus as best as possible, but we have another bite on Tuesday. So, siyaqala ke manje maqaba and fitness of the board, which on my document is on page 29. I'm hoping that everybody got this. Can we... Page 20? 26, I beg your pardon. Because we're back to work mode, I will start this side, start that side, start in the middle, and whatever the case might be, so that everybody gets a chance to have the first bite of the cake or the last bite of the cake, whichever one is the more juicier one. Observations, honorable members. Fitness of the board. In the mini minor mode. All right. What's that? Right, it's fine, it doesn't matter. All right, in terms of observations, and we're only dealing with observation 13.1. Yeah, we agree that we'll do one by one, so I beg your pardon, and you'll talk to all of them. 13.1, Chauke, we will start with you. Can we give you, 10 minutes is a lot, there are many of them. 3 minutes, Baba, 3 or 4 minutes, you'll have 2 bites. Is that okay? Eh? Yeah, I'm asking what time. 3 minutes per section, per member. That's fine. If there's time, we'll come back later on.
If I don't have anything, I will not come back. Okay. No,
on a
section. On the next round. So no, it's fine.
No, no. What I'm saying is you've got 3 minutes, Honorable Chauke, to talk on fitness of the board. If there's anything you want to talk to on this, or if you want to introduce, or if you want to remove. On the fitness of the board. Your time starts now, sir.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. My point on the ability of the board to discharge its fiduciary duty, that majority of board members in some instances did not act in the utmost. The first one, Chair. Some of the decisions of the board clearly shows that the majority of the board members did not exercise care, skills and diligence as expected as directors in their position. Subsequently to this, board members demonstrated lack of independent, including judgment, obvious, Chair. As a result, some of the decisions of the board were not in the best interest of the SABC. And you'll recall this point that how divided that board was. Then I'll go to the point of the point one, which is the financial status sustainability of the SABC. Chair, the financial status and sustainability of SABC has been severely compromised.
I'm sorry, Honorable Chauke, maybe I'm the only one that's not following you.
Yes.
Is the sustainability still under
one?
And are you introducing a new something, or are you saying under 311?
311, is it 311?
Yeah.
311 and... Yeah, I think it's 311.
You,
that deals with the financial sustainability.
No, I'm talking into the wrong document. My 311 talks
terms
to...
Terms of reference, Chair. I'm looking at the terms of reference.
No, no, Honorable. Then we're not talking the same language. I was saying if you went to page 26...
Okay. Give me a second, Chair.
If you look at page 26, so just so that we have the same, we're talking the same language. On page 26, we've got 311, 312, 313, 314, up to 310.
I've dealt with 313, Chair, which is the board, I think, to start with. For status, I've dealt with 313,
okay,
which deals with the board.
Okay.
So the other one, the financial status, obviously, deals with the, it will be the... The next point, in fact, but I may not deal with it now. I may take the next round, Chair.
Okay. So just in terms of 313,
you kept it on.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult. All right. Okay. Around the observations of the board, those were the only comments you wanted to make. Is there anything else on the board itself?
No, on the board, I think I'm fine.
You're done.
I've just outlined the lack of judgment, the care, failure, independent. I think those are the key areas that I've identified in that line.
All right. Honorable Killian, first of all, if there's anything that we currently have that you want removed, strengthened, and if there's stuff that you want to add, so if you could do it in that fashion, if you could talk to what we have in terms of you don't think it's appropriate, and then introduce new stuff. Then it'll help us terms of monitoring how we do the changes. Good. Anything on 13.1?
Okay. Chairperson, due to very limited time, I would like to focus on what I need to add, but I would like to also just suggest that we extend one line in 13.1.1 to say that the Minister extended the acting appointments because... Otherwise, of the executive, otherwise, you know, there would have been a problem. That was evidence before us. We note that. Secondly, I just broadly want to say I don't have a problem, except for here and there, just, rephrasing with the contents of the observations on the fitness of the board. But I do believe that a major omission here, Chair, we're focusing on the fiduciary responsibilities in terms of the Companies Act. But we actually have no focus on their primary responsibility as the board of a public broadcaster, which with specific responsibilities in terms of the Act. And I would, with your if you allow me, I would like to just refer to section 13 sub 11. The board controls the affairs of the corporation and must protect matters referred to in section 6.2 of this act. 6.2 relates to the charter, and they have specific responsibilities as far as that is concerned. The policy revision of the SABC. The board has a role to play there. They must facilitate it. They must ensure public participation. They must ensure equal, equitable treatment of all segments of South African population. They must ensure that the mandate to provide a wide range of audience interests, etc., etc. Essentially, what this act says is the board controls the affairs of the corporation, but it failed, in my view, and in what we heard here, it failed to monitor and enforce compliance with the charter by the corporation. And I think that is a massive failure, Chairperson. If we go through their responsibilities, that we cannot ignore that. Yes, the financial matters, grave. But this, because this is the public broadcaster with a specific responsibility, and this we must extract from the Act. If members would allow, I'm prepared to just draft a paragraph similar to paragraph 13.1.3, just to highlight that specific failure. All of the woes, or most of the woes that we've seen here, clearly it was not only this board, it was previous boards as well. But that allowed for intervention, shareholder representative intervention. The board didn't know their responsibilities. And I think there was evidence here that they, in fact, didn't know the Act. Only some members knew the Act and their responsibilities. But I think that was a very grave, and that was clear that they were not fit to hold office. And taking this matter forward, Chair, I would like to say that we cannot ignore this matter when a new interim board and ultimately a final board is appointed. Thank you.
Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to agree with Honourable Killian on that paragraph on charter. But in my 3 minutes, which starts now, I'm still asking aloud. I'm still asking aloud whether the after we look at the observations, whether fitness of the board is the correct subheading. Because there are issues there that go beyond the fitness of the board, like action or inaction of the board. But I'm just asking that aloud for us to consider. And this is not grammar, but in the first line it should be had resigned, not has resigned. In 13.1.2, I would want to suggest in the last line, in light of the resignations, because spell check won't pick this out. 13.1.3, Chairperson. I think that sentence is a bit too long, and I would suggest that we stop at Public Finance Management Act, full stop, and then say no effective measures were in place. Then while spelling of cumulative. Then 13.1.6, Chair. We are observing here in what we've got as draft, and furthermore, we are saying the board failed to take the report on review. Are we suggesting that they should have, or are we noting that they did not take it on review? I think we can't make a pronouncement that they failed. Right? So that's my point there. Then 1.7, the SABC board made no meaningful intervention, or at worst, seemed unaware of the intimidation and things like that. 13.1.8 needs to be redrafted by English-speaking people, Waters, etc. 13.1.9, you see, does this round robin and special board meetings speak to the dysfunctionality of the board or the board not adhering to recognized norms and practices in conducting its affairs? I don't think it speaks to the dysfunctionality of the board if they round-robin and do things like that. But it's not following recognized practices, norms and practices. And I'll stop there. And 13.1.10, not SITING, CITING. Thank you, Chair. The, not sitting, lack of board chairperson, citing. CI. Thank you.
All of us that are not English speakers. We'll try and capture most of those things. And remember, where there's agreement, there's agreement. Where there are different views, we'll put those different views as we capture them, and we will get into the meat of them when we do the work on Tuesday as well. Is that okay, members? Because, or otherwise, if, as Mr. Singh says, I agree with whoever, it helps us. Otherwise, we'll have 17 versions of everything. Can we then move to Honorable Loliwe, focusing just on 13.1?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I agree with what is captured here and the recommendation from Honorable Gillian. Mine is only to add on 13.15. I want to capture something where English-speaking people will assist me to say, expanding on the HR management, the board failed to create stability in the institution because testimony given was that many positions were on an acting capacity. I just wanted to add that in 13.15. Yes, Chair.
Chair, so I think as Parliament, when we make our observations, we also need to consider the laws that we help write and oversee their implementation. So what I've done in the observations is relate its section in terms of which law it violates. So now that's going to take a lot of time because I've done quite a lot of work on that. I don't know if you'd like me to submit it in writing, but I'll certainly try to go through it in the time that you've given me. Okay, 13.12, in light of these resignations, the board is non-existent, not dysfunctional. So in light of all the resignations, there is no board, so it's non-existent, not dysfunctional. So can we just change that? Okay, and then in terms of 13.13 and fail to discharge its duties in terms of the PFMA, what are those duties? It's in section 50 and in section 51 of the PFMA. Can that be included?
No, stop your time, it's fine, ma'am. What are we saying? I thought we said this yesterday. When, for instance, you're saying, you should just be saying to us, as referred in section 30 or section 31, as opposed to regurgitating what 30 and 31
yeah,
is. So in other words, we'll put reference to the list. So if
absolutely.
You just give us which law it is,
sure.
We'll try and capture it.
Okay, so it's in violation of section 10.4A of the Broadcasting Act. It's in violation of section 51A of the PFMA. It's in violation of 51A of the PFMA again. 13.14, this is in violation of section 51B of the PFMA. 13.15, this is in violation of section 1311 of the Broadcasting Act. Am I going to...
No, it's fine. What we were trying to copy it, but all those 13.1, you'll just put 1.3, 13.1, 1.4, and you can give it to us in writing.
Okay. Should I just give it to you in writing? So basically what I've done for the whole of Section 13 is list which section violates, which then will feed into the recommendations, which will speak to what must happen if those sections are violated. Thanks, Chair.
So there's no additions or subtractions on 13.1. Other than that, because I think you're taking us forward in terms of pointing to it,
yes.
There's no other stuff you
except
dysfunctional becomes non-existent.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair.
All right. Members are following? From Fandam's entry, that's fine. Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Chair. I want to support Honourable Killian with regards to 13.11 about the board's controls of the affairs of the corporation. We need that paragraph, so I want to support her there. As far as 13.110, to do with the company secretary, that is in, I'll send it to you, but it's one section of the Powers Privileges Act that's in contravention, and that's 17.2, D and E in particular. But if we could just stipulate that. And then as far as 13.19, where we talk about the dysfunctionality of the board with around Robbins, I think here we need to be a bit stronger. It was a manipulation by the chairperson at the time to manipulate the direction in which the board was going in. So by having round robins, I, as a board member, for example, was unaware what other people were thinking, couldn't engage with them, you know, and share ideas. So you were, you at the behest of the chairperson, you, he would phone you, tell you whatever, could mislead you, in fact, so that you would then say, yes, okay, I support that decision that you weren't taking. And that was a total manipulation of the board. And I think that needs to be strongly worded here. And if,
you're going to try, Cindy, I know, is trying to do it, but I'm going to just try and note the points that people made and just revisit it without necessarily going to the heading. For instance, I'll say round robin, because the one said common practice, I think, and you're saying manipulation. So we'll just go back to that and see if we're on the same language so that we don't have too much here. But I'll try and note them as we go around, and before we go to the next one, I'll just read those over again. Is that all right?
And that's me, Chip.
Chairperson, I was wondering if Honourable Waters doesn't just want to count the number of special meetings in the documentation that was provided to us, because that would substantiate the fact that the board was actually running on special meetings more so than on regularly scheduled meetings. So we have a list here. If we can rely on the...
It's fine. If we agree that it's what he's saying generally is what we all agree upon, people can help us to substantiate it in our writing. Anything else, Mr. Waters? Thank you. 13-1, Honourable Kwena.
Sure, thanks, Chair. I agree with everything that's been said, especially what Honourable Van Dam was saying about the Act. But on 13-1-6, I think to say they failed to fully implement is an understatement, because they directly opposed the Public Protector's remedial action by implementing their own remedial action, which is to get that Mtunu advice and then act on it. So I think it's much graver than just failing to implement. And then I agree with everything else, except that I think we should add two more things. One is the fact that their ability to discharge of their duties was also curtailed by the MOI and the delegation of authority framework. I think we must mention that, because If we don't do that, we're missing out on a very important component of why they failed. You know, they were surpassed a lot by some of these changes that were made in the document. So I think we need to add that the changes in the MOI became a serious impediment to their ability to discharge of their duties. That's 2-3. We must also the board was rebellious. It must be mentioned, because one, they actively went, or what was left of the board actively went and had a press conference in which they publicly defied the shareholder. And part of these people who did this were the current acting GCEO, Mr. Aguma. I think we must make that observation, so that when we come to recommendations, it must be clear. We cannot have this sort of thing happening again. We must be strong about that kind of behavior, that they are accountable to Parliament and we would also speak to the responsibilities of the minister in terms of how she manages or takes oversight over the board. Thanks, Chair.
Just to assist us, if you look at accountability, Honourable Mkwena, and page 30, that point, the last point you're making about the walkout, We've put it under accountability. Are you saying we should move it to the board? Because we thought it was just general. The walkout by the SHBC board on the 7th of Thing has shown total disregard for Parliament. Is that not the same thing of what you're saying? Now, whether it's under accountability or we put it under board, neither here or there for us.
I think it must go under board because it speaks to the character of the board, and whether that character describes them as fit.
So I think the point we are making is that instead of us adding a new, what you're talking about, we would take, and remember we'll refine it, you'll have opportunity over the weekend. You're suggesting we take it out of 13.1 and we make it, 13.5 and we put it in 13.1?
No, because also I think the walkout is a different thing. Them actually pronouncing in public that they do not recognize Parliament is a completely different issue that I think we must, and it must be added that the GCEO was in that meeting.
Honorable Kubisi.
No, thank you, Chair. I think I'm covered on 13.1.1, but on 13.1.2, I want to speak on the issue of legal uncertainty. It is crucial. It is of crucial importance to establish clear legislative guidelines for the functioning of the SAPC through harmonizing the two principal acts with the MOI. I think that point is very important. Hence, I say there is some kind of legal uncertainty that has played a big role in the fiasco leading up to the dysfunction of the board. And the manipulation of this uncertainty has contributed immensely to the breakdown in transparent and accountable corporate governance. So I thought, Chair, that's what I want to add on 13.1.2. Then on 13.1.3, I believe that as it looks into the non-compliance with the PFMA, but also it's like, if there's some history involved whereby the new incumbents will got subsumed into a culture of non-compliance because of that previous history that had always been there. So new board members who came in, they got caught up in the culture of non-compliance. So this culture of non-compliance had been there before, and it kept on going on, transferred from one generation of the board to another. Then there is also another, this issue of non-compliance with PFMA, the issue of skills, whether the board was skill-based or it was just individuals who didn't have skills to perform the task. And of course, whether workshopping was done in the process to alert them to the job that they were supposed to do. So, and that is very important. And also this non-performance of the board, non-compliance also refers to the issue of lines, of functional lines within the board being divided. That division would say, we are not complying, well, other members within the board would want to comply. But because of the schism within the board, there will be non-compliance. So these issues also could be factored in, Chairperson. So I think I must stop there for a while.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I actually wanted to bring in issues under this. I'm not sure where exactly we are going to be putting them, but there are issues of morality, ethics, and the skills exodus that I want to speak on. Can I just give you what I've written, and then you can see where we can put it? The board dismally failed to carry out its duties. Notwithstanding the technical know-how, experience, skills and qualifications, the board leadership, notably its chairpersons, appear to have had high tolerance levels for immoral, unethical, unbecoming conduct and practices in that they incapacitated the group executives from carrying out their operational duties, thus rendering the work environment extremely unbearable, which led to costly skills exodus. It also created fertile conditions for ill-informed policy decisions, which made the institution very vulnerable to reputational risks and made the institution extremely uncompetitive and compromised the governance of the institution. I thought something that speaks to the morality, because it's not that people that were there did not have the skills. They did, some of them have the skills and the experience. But somehow their moral compass was just shaky. They just allowed themselves to get involved into operational issues and incapacitating the group executives. Maybe the wordsmiths will work around that, but that would be my contribution on this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the 13.1.4, I think we need to make an observation about the, and this ties in, we need to strengthen the observation about failure to discharge, the board failing to discharge its fiduciary duties in terms of the Companies Act. I think it was referred to earlier, but we need to strengthen that by a clause. We've got 13.1.3, 13.1.4 is fruitful and wasteful expenditure. 13.1.5, I suggest, needs to relate to concerns about whether the institution is an ongoing business, its solvency. We need to look into that. And that is the document that I prepared. I will prepare a little
I'll allow you. We're limiting this to the board.
It's the board that failed in its responsibilities. Okay. Just to give you an example, in terms of the Auditor General's report that is before us, the financial statements for auditing were not prepared in accordance with international financing as required by Section 55 of the PFMA and to Section 29 of the Companies Act. That is a requirement of the board. The board, on the first page of the Auditor General's report, and that's not the management report, it's the one that is in front of us, is signed by the chairman of the board and the then Mr. Aguma, the acting CEO, and there he indicates that they accept responsibility for that. But it is insightful that here it indicates the directors are of the opinion that the internal accounting controls are inadequate. That is the heart of the problems at the SABC. They already up front are saying that, and that resulted in the qualified audit, and then subsequent to the AG's report, there's further information that raises serious concerns as to whether the SABC is a viable, ongoing business concern. So, Chair, just a short paragraph on that. Then 13.1.6, I have a suggestion there that when that relates to the public protector, the report on review, and that's the last line there, if there was disagreement with recommendations, it was findings. Can I just suggest an insertion of a word in that sentence? And that is where it says, and furthermore, also failed to take the report on review. There's a disagreement with the findings of the report. And then just lastly on 13.1.8, there is a couple of issues there. The schedule of board meeting and preparations and necessary timely issuing meeting documentation, that needs to be tidied up. Thank you, Chair.
All right, before we move on I'll come to you, Mr. Waters. Just Honourable Swartz, can you go to page 29? On 13.4.2. compliance with existing legislation, the PFMA and all those things are not adhered to. Remember, you spoke about the PFMA. We're going to struggle with where does it fit in. At the end of the day, we'll probably have to take off. We try to do it in headings, but I'm saying, what are you talking about? Is it not sufficiently captured? At least part of it. Let's forget about anything. But when you were referring to the accounting authority not conforming to supply chain management and all those things, is it not sufficiently covered? We can move it from here and put it in.
No, I think that is useful there as well. But you see, we refer right up here about the Public Finance Management Act, and we'll repeat it later.
Can we take that same sentence and put it there, or are you going to craft something for us?
No, let's put that. Let's take that and put it in under 13.1.4, and then there'll be a reference, a cross reference as well to the report that I'm tabling as well. You see, so that's the issue where you spoke about some of the work that we've done needs to be referred to as well. But we can do that next week. We can tidy it up.
Yeah, the difficulty is next week all of you are going to expect a document that we must prepare in your absence.
But we understand that's going to be a working document again.
All right.
Thank you.
Chair, I don't know, just on the point that Honourable Dr. Khoza raised was about the incapacitation of the group executives. And I don't know if I understood it properly, but my take is...
If we take Mhlanga, then we'll come back and deal with those inputs. There's still Honourable Mhlanga. That's why I was trying to capture them, and we'll go through them, and we'll just get another bite. Honourable Mhlanga.
Chair, thank you. A few things. I'm not sure whether we used observations, we also, well, I would say stroke findings, because if it's possible just to look at the much more appropriate word. With regards to 13.1.2, I propose that we add, but I know colleagues have already spoken to this matter, that the board, whilst it was not correcting, continued to take decisions and had them implemented. So you have those incidences that are observed. On 13.15, where it looks at the HR and finance, the board appointed people without following the prescribed procedures for employment, including increases of remunerations. Well, colleagues have already spoken about them failing to carry out the fiduciary responsibilities, and then on 13.1.7, the board failed to. The board failed to uphold the laws of the Republic by itself violating the ICASA rulings, failed to uphold the editorial independence, thus turning the national broadcaster into a board entity. 13.1.5, well, I guess it's fine, I will leave that. Colleagues have already referred to that one. I want to make an addition that the board, in allowing for the amendment of the MOI, abdicated their responsibility and transferred their responsibilities to the EXCO against the Act, SABC Act. Something that we may want to consider is that board members also had access to extra benefits as non-members. I mean, some of them had offices at the SAPC. Some of them were actually afforded cars, something that we may want to look at if indeed there is appetite for it. But the board also, well, I find it very strange that when we dealt with Professor McGoover, he did not know who the shareholder is. He did not accept accounting to Parliament, and I think it's for that reason that he even took us to court, because he just felt that he's not accountable to this entity. And the last matter, is the board failed to protect the national key point and did not ensure that senior members are subjected to security clearance? Thank you.
Honourable members, on the 16th of November or 19th of November, Ma'am Van Dam said to us that we're going to have to put extra hours, and I made an undertaking that we're going to work on Christmas Day if necessary. At the rate we're going now, I can assure you're not going to go home today if you want to meet Friday, or if you want to meet Tuesday. I can assure you that none of you are going to go home this weekend, because it's taken us an hour just to do one, and that's why I asked the question earlier on. But what we will not do is not meet the deadline of the 24th. If it means we must work this entire weekend, we're going to work this weekend. So it's really your call. We gave you an option. We chose this option. All I'm saying is the consequence of this option, I can assure you, honorable members, we will work tonight and we'll work tomorrow if we must meet the 15th deadline. It's taken us an hour and we've only done one, and we haven't concluded it. So bear that in mind, because I don't think we're going to make undertakings and fail to meet them because of our own doings. Let us just try and recap so that, because we must do work behind the scene. There was, and we're not going to put the headings, so I'll just put them, and if people say yes, we'll tick them off. These are the kinds of things that members have either added to or contributed to. We make reference to the charter, and Killian will give us more in terms of the specifics. I don't think there's a problem. Everybody supported that, and we make reference to the Companies Act, as I think it was Mr. Swartz. Mr. Swartz will just give us the specifics, because I don't think there's thing on there. Then there's the issue of, do we refer to the board as non-existent or dysfunctional? What are we saying there? Just on that one only. We don't have a big debate, because we can put both of them in, but I thought it'll help us clear it. Non-existent. Okay?
Depends on the time. Look, now there is no board, but there was a board that was dysfunctional. No.
Honourable Masango, I think the point she was making was that the board, as she understands it, must be made up of at least 12 members. And the minute it became lower than 12 members, she interprets it as non-existent. And I'm asking the question, is that what we want to put in? We can always refine it with the lawyers later on.
The section 13.1 opens with, at the time of adopting this report, at the time when we adopt this report, there will be no more. Right now, the board is non-existent, and when we adopt it, whenever we do, there still won't be.
No, it's fine. Wherever there's non-existent, we'll put non-existent stroke dysfunctional, and we'll clean it up to on. Yeah. All right. Round robin, we spoke about common practice, and then Honourable Waters, I think, said no. Common practice is too light. Let's call it manipulation. What is the sense we're saying? We'll put it in here. Remember, it's a working document. We can always think about it, but we can't have so many this is but that. What we can eliminate, let's eliminate. Do you want dysfunctional, not dysfunctional? We have tried to couch it that it was not common practice. He was saying it was manipulation. Which one do we prefer? Common practice. We'll argue about it tomorrow. I mean, we will note it tomorrow. You'll have another opportunity, another bite. And then the public protector, I think we said failed, and somebody said opposed. There shouldn't be too many difficulties. Did they oppose it, or did they fail to implement?
The narrative was they speak and oppose it.
Although the public protector came and she said they failed to implement. I mean, that was the word of the public protector.
But the issue there, Chair, will be the implementation. I understand the point opposed, but the fact is that is to implement remedial action. So I think let's stick to the implementation rather than putting the oppose.
just for the two of you and Mr. Swartz, you're a lawyer, the compromise is as opposed to opposed, failed, we say did not implement fully, because that is the safer one. The board did not, wherever we refer to that, we'll say they did not implement fully. That's it.
Can I convince the committee otherwise? The thing is, to fail to implement means that you tried and you did not achieve. But actively seeking to find a different solution is opposing. And I think that's a much it has serious implications on the character of this board.
That's right.
Can put both. We can say they failed to implement and directly imposed directly opposed by seeking opposing.
Let's take Honourable Khoza. Between this, before you go in, Honourable Members, bear in mind that we want to give you as perfect a document as possible. But if there are 17 views on, let's say, point one, you make it literally impossible for us to prepare a document. Then we might as well do what we did yesterday. Argue it out and get it to a document. That's the only thing that I'm worried about, that we'll come back and we'll say opposed, failed, rebellious, all those things. And all we'll be doing is repeating what we should have been doing today. So you guys must assist us in this, because it's not our documents, it's our documents. So all I'm saying is, in your input, assist us to prepare a document. Otherwise, we'll have to go back to what we did yesterday, because it was more practical. We take a point, we argue a point, we agree on a point, but we can't have 10 different interpretations and expect us to take the decision on what it should be. On this one, the board fails to, the board opposed, the board did not implement. That's what we're arguing now. Khoza.
Chair, I wanted to sponsor a way out. I am suggesting that we don't deal with semantics now. What you then do in the document, where there is a contested terminology that is adopted, that is used, we probably bold it or we put it in a different color, so that when we do the editing of the document, we can then agree which terminology we will go for.
Okay. If that's
rather than wasting a lot of time dealing with the deciding on which term is failed, opposed, or whatever. The legal guys will be there to assist as well.
If members want to do that, that's fine. Just on the process that we've done now, there's been 13 amendments. All I'm saying is, on Tuesday, you'll come back. At some point, we're going to have to resolve these 13 things. The question is, do we do it now or do we do it on Thursday? I thought that the deliberation would have meant we take all these views, put them in the pot, and try and refine them. Because all you guys are doing now, all honorable members are doing now, is just airing your views and putting them into a wish list. When are we going to take this wish list and make it a committee report? That's all that I'm asking. 1, 2, 3, 4. Just in the process, how do we deal with it?
I'm going to propose that, Chair, we throw in, as much as we are throwing in issues there, and then we can then clean them up, because as we clean them up, we look into the terms of reference, so that we don't differ much with what terms of reference says we must do. So I will propose that you take that process, we throw up issues there, and then we pass on. Because if we're going to debate those issues again, it will create problems. We'll never finish. So we'll throw them to you there with the table, and then you'll note them. As you clean up the document, you'll definitely have to apply a proper a terminology in the process. As Honorable Makosi was proposing, that maybe we sort of list them up, but we'll throw them to you, and then you can then process those issues. It's easy.
Right. So you'll get an unedited document, except that it'll have reflected all the views of every member. Is that what you're saying? Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, I don't, this report doesn't live or die by what word we choose. So I would suggest we use contravention or violation, which are generally accepted legal terms. But I also like to add that this was not only in violation of a Public Protector Act, but also of a constitutional court judgment, which found that the Public Protector's remedial action is binding. This judgment was handed down on the 31st of March 2016, which gave enough time for the SABC board to then act on the remedial action ordered by the Private Protector. But I've written all my suggested edits, which I'll send to Cindy, and I'll include that if we agree that we include that.
Right, I thought we were talking on the what is it? Let me put it differently. After, if this was the end of the process, honourable members, if this meant we had gone through everything, would you expect us to come to you on Tuesday with a document that has this throw question mark as Chauke is saying to it? No, can I finish speaking? Are you expecting a document that comes that says on point one, this was Singh's view, this was Vincent's view, this was so-and-so's view, or do we want to come to a point where we say this is the committee's view? Because right now, let me give you an example. Right now on this point of let's take practice versus manipulation. Let's just take that one. Practice versus manipulation. Sitting here, we're not clear what the committee is saying, because somebody is saying put practice and manipulation. That's what one person is saying. Somebody else is saying no, come back. Is this how we're going to work with this thing? What is it that you want so that we can do? Let's take Loliwe first and take... Then, okay, let's take Loliwe, you'll take you. Just on what is it that we must do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Chair, our product should be a document which meets the legal requirements. So what I suggest should be done, as we are debating here, our scribes are catching this, the thrust of what we want to reflect. So what is legally acceptable should be what is in the, what should reflect in our document. And then we'll debate that on Tuesday. Thanks, Chair.
Chair. Okay, I'm informed that you guys will throw everything on the table. We'll try and get some sort of a general view, and we'll have a second bite on Friday. Oh, not on Friday, on Tuesday. Yeah. No, let's take Mokwena. You'll come in, Mokwena?
Yeah, no, sure, I agree, because I was going to suggest that you must take charge of the situation so that we'll give you what we think, right? You will get a general sense of... Right, and then so don't ask us what we should put in there or not. I think this session that you're engaging in now, we should cut it out. We must just put what we put, and then that's it. And then we'll.
Okay, no, that's fine. If you then give us the responsibility of trying to synthesize it, remember you'll get it back even before Tuesday, and you can still disagree with what we thought we are hearing you saying. Is that okay? All right? You're fine. Okay. All right.
Way forward, because you feel that we're not moving fast enough. I just think that what we must do as a committee today is just, in line with what we now resolved, look at the biggest picture, the content issues that will lead us to the resolutions or the recommendations. For us now to express huge gaps, etc., but I would like to suggest, Chair, and I don't know if I will be shut down, but can we not perhaps look at all of the observations, because I would argue that some of the observations could also fit in under the fitness of the board, etc. You know, and then there's one heading, for instance, corporate governance, which actually refers more to the management failures. And that was also an oversight of the board. But be that as it may, the issue that I'm just making is it is a little problematic to work in the headings, and it's going to delay us. Can we not focus on broadly observations and say, this is the foundation because we have this mandate, this is our terms of reference, and we must come up with recommendations based on the observations as a whole, not necessarily categorized.
No, we learned by trial and error. I thought that was the first suggestion we made. We said to you when we started, do you want to talk to everything so that we get a sense that this captures it and you'll add new things? And everybody said, I can't. Let's go on. And it's fine that we do it that way.
No, Chair, I want to maybe agree that maybe we amend the earlier position that we took under Mr. Singh, because it's clear that they will not definitely be able to follow and finish now. And then let's go back to this new position that will then help us to speed up the process. That is why I was a little bit disorganized from the start, because I prepared myself in line with the general input that I was going to do, but I'm not going to come back because I know those issues will be already raised by colleagues. Thank you.
No, Chair, can I put the spinner in the works and say, I think it would be dangerous for us to make decisions based on time, right? What the primary thing here is not time. It is to come up with a document that will fix the situation. And I think the approach that we're taking now, which is to look at each and every heading specifically, I think it gives us focus on the specific issues. I think the approach to just, you know, throw it, everything in one bag is going to it is going to defocus us. I'm therefore suggesting that we stick to the what we're doing, but maybe just put time limitations on what we're doing, because I think we're running into the danger of not giving a proper focus on this thing. And these two sections are extremely, extremely important.
No, Chair, I wanted to say I wish I lived in Mokwena's world. In our world, you work with time, and we have to be efficient with time. If we don't set time frames, we won't be able to finish. And two, I wanted Honorable Singh to withdraw his proposal, because Honorable Singh can see that his proposal has not worked.
I'm talking through you,
Chair. I know that Honorable Singh, by the way, we are from KZN. We have this thing of talking, you know, and he understands what I'm saying. And I know that, Chair, if you can give him the opportunity, because if we attend to this thing, each one of us will then zoom into those sections that we are really feeling strongly about. And that way we will be able to save time.
Chair, I think we must guard against contradicting ourselves. We have got to take a decision and stick by it and not retract what we have said before. Our prime motive is to work on the mandate, on the resolution given to us by the House, and ensure that we do some constructive work with regard to that, and we're able to come with strong recommendations that will assist the House and assist Parliament, assist the Portfolio Committee, correct SAPC. So I would therefore think, Chairperson, we have agreed that we have a document before us, we have been working on it. We didn't say it was perfect, but it was a springboard from which we could start, and we've been working on this document. Now, we've been giving views. They are collated, put together in a bowl. But at the end of the day, the technical document will end up with the legal team and come back to us. So there is no harm in us giving you the principal decisions, because there is no disagreement at the moment. We are giving principal decisions and we give them to you. And thereafter, when the document comes, we look into it and we try to reshape it, and the legal team will eventually work on the document. Thank you.
Right, Honourable Members, I was just reading this thing. Outside of adding any new one that we could add, but as it stands here, there are about 8 sections. I'm just talking about observations. So it's 13.1 to 13.8. So there are 8 sections if we take Mr. Singh's route. And I tend to agree that we can't, for the sake of time, compromise quality. Yeah, but I'm saying in these 8 sessions, we either take a decision that it's an hour a session, it's whatever the case might be a session. What I'm saying to you is that's the practical reality that we face to it. Because you guys can't say to us quality and then you say to us time. You make it extremely difficult for us here. You've got 8 sections on recommendations. Not on recommendations, on observations. The question is, can we agree that it's so many minutes per section, we divide it equally? Or you talk to everything? We do not want to compromise on the quality. 5 minutes per section per man. Okay. Cindy is saying and I mean, she doesn't have to dictate to us. But I'm saying these are the technical people that help us. She's suggesting that let's give every member 10 minutes to talk on globally the observations. Remember, because with the recommendations, we're going to zoom in word for word around the recommendations, because that's the crux. So she's saying if every member had, because on observations, we all know, I want to talk about HR, you want to talk about finance, and so on. That's the suggestion being made for Cindy. We are talking only observations. Recommendations, we're going to do it with a fine-tooth comb. Are we comfortable with that approach? We are. What time is it? Okay, we'll start from scratch with everybody again, yeah. Welcome, Honorable. We did get your message, Honorable Kubisa. You're going to have 10 minutes to talk to all the observations. You're just at the point where we're saying, around observations, we're going to give members 10 minutes, and you zoom into the important ones. And we'll try and capture them, and we will try and put them in. What time is tea? Oh, all right. Tea is 11:30. 10 minutes, and at 11:30 we'll break, and we'll come for the other people. We are not changing from that now. And we're dealing only with observations. We'll try and capture what you're saying, and we will try and fit it in and give you a document. And then we want to get to the recommendations. Honorable Chauke, maybe we'll start with you. Must have said somewhere else. I know you've just come in late, Kwankwa. Let's start with you, Honorable Matango. We'll go up that way, come all the way down here. You only got 10 minutes to give us, because you should have read this document for the past 4 days anyway. Around observations, you've got 10 minutes to show us which are the priorities you want us to change, touch, and then we will debate them in detail on Tuesday. I think that's the decision we're taking, and we're not changing that decision around observations. We're not. Your 10 minutes starts now, sir, on everything around observations.
Chair, I will lead by example and save you time. I will not take the whole 10 minutes. On the shareholder area, role of shareholder, because that's not the next matter, there is one matter I'd like to speak to. The there's a question here about the which of the two acts, the Companies Act and the Broadcasting Act, as to which one is superior with regards to the areas that we are looking at. I think the, what colleague Gillian said, and she's been raising this thing throughout the hearing, is that with regards to specific areas that are mentioned in the Act, those areas, the Public Broadcasting Act takes precedence. In other words, it's not the other way around. And I know somewhere there is a question of clarity, and I think we should just correct the clarity aspect that in areas that are prescribed in law, that law, or I think, yes, that law is the most superior. In this case, the Public Broadcasting. I have, well, the issues of, I think I've already spoken to this matter during the board on the MOI, and I wouldn't want to repeat myself. I think, yes, I
from scratch on everything.
My view was that the MOI, the board allowed it itself, and that's why my view was that it does not belong. While the minister may have recommended it, but it is the board that decided to allow its responsibilities to be changed, and they could have stood their ground, and they have failed. That's why my view is that it actually doesn't belong. Now, there's an issue of the shareholder role in the appointment. I think from where I am, in all these things that I hear, I would locate those things in the board. If the board took its position, I mean, you wouldn't be having a problem, as much as if a committee allows to be manipulated by anybody, that committee should be taking the responsibility. I'm not going to get into funding corporate governance issues. I will not. I think I've already spoken when I spoke to the board. The other matters, I think, are in fine accountability. I've already spoken to the journalistic matter, and I place it in the board. I will submit my crafted document, and you can decide whether you want to put it here or you put it in the board, because I took these things and I put them in the board. All the failures, I put them in the board. There's an issue I'd like to raise, Chair, and it's not included on the Peace Parliamentary Committee. It's an additional, and a couple of things are also available, that the Portfolio Committee, in selecting candidates to serve in the SABC, failed to carry out its judicious role in appointing those individuals. They appointed individuals, some of them, who did not understand their responsibility even after, towards the end of their tenure. And I think the evidence that was given here by McGrove, that he did not know most of those things that he's supposed to be knowing. I don't know how he went through the selection process and the what they call. And I will come with recommendations on the same matter. Now, there's an issue of political interference. I guess earlier on we dealt with the matter when we dealt with the first subject in the day. And a few things that I would like to raise. I've raised the issue of appointment, the issues of increase of salaries, the correcting, non-correcting. Well, I guess there is a matter that I don't know where to locate it, whether it is in the board. You know, you have a person, for instance, in the name of the secretary of the board who gets appointed to the position of she's now a corporate a director for risk management and something, and no procedures are followed. So those things, perhaps when it comes to questions of HR, corporate governance, actually, there's a lot of things that have gone wrong in corporate governance. The issue from the evidence that was given by one of the ladies was that in order for people to get into corporate governance, to enter into SAPC, you don't need any qualification. Actually, you can get there with a very low qualification, unlike other industries. But those people then migrate into the core business and then find their way out. I think failure to have those measures that says you don't belong to the core business and therefore stay in that space, either as an artist or as a presenter, but not into the core business of the SAPC. There are issues of failure to adhere to the HR dictates, where people have to apply, where adverts, shortlisting, interviews and the competency tests, that has not happened. I think I would wish that we bring those things very clearly here in our documentation on governance issues, and for the appropriate subcommittee. Well, I did speak to it when I spoke to the board, appropriate subcommittee to make recommendations to the board and for the board to take the decisions. I guess, Chair, I must end up my I must end my input, because my preoccupation was indeed the matters of the board, and I think I'm comfortable with the rest of the other things. Thank you. I will submit my input that I've done here.
Try to capture it, and we will find a way of putting all these things together. But if there are submissions, as we did yesterday, please submit them to us before you leave. Can we then move on to Honourable Khoza? Any comments you want to make on matters that we have termed observations?
Chair, I'm going to surprise you because I'm going to be very quick. On the role of the shareholder, Chair, I would like 13.2.1 to be firmed up a bit by indicating that the minister, there appears to be the testimony that was indicates that the minister attempted to take over the powers of parliament in the process, the powers of parliament in as far as the appointment and removal of members of the board. And I think that we needed to put something that speaks to the issues of separation of powers. Chair, I'm also concerned, and I think it should come out under observations, because there is a bill underway that is deleting the powers of parliament and replacing those with that of the minister. And I do think that at this stage that should be reflected as observations and concerns of this particular committee. And Chair, the second one, that one I think it will have to be firmed up. I do think that the matters are covered pretty well. But I also do think that the matter 13.2.2 around the allegations of the minister's involvement in the appointment of the COO, I do think that we do need to look at the terminology that we use there, because there was undue influence
as opposed to the direct involvement. But that's a matter of semantics, and I think we need to firm that up. Maybe our legal guys will have to help us around that issue. The issues of legal status and governance, Chair, I wanted to zoom into 13.3.5. Chair, I'm not sure how are we going to put this, but it's a matter that I must be honest, I'm feeling particularly strong about. I really do think that those of you that might have worked in an environment of structured and project finance, you always find a way of doing a deal that will achieve the objective, but without necessarily saying it overtly, you know? And my concern is around the issue of the multi-choice deal, and that, you know, this leads or whatever you call it, to me it looks like some kind of, you know, selling the public asset without necessarily saying I am selling this public asset. And I do think something will have to be crafted along those lines, because it's not an outright sale, but it's the contract that is speaking, when you look at the terms that are there in that contract, because I read it, I think it's tantamount to the outright sale, but it's not saying we are selling. And maybe the legal guys will have to help us around that one. Chair, I think the corporate governance, I do think that maybe we may have to, probably as part of our observations, to pull out a few key corporate governance principles that the SABC board or that institution seem to have violated. Because in this thing here, we don't seem to have, we are making assumptions that everybody understand what those corporate governance principles are. And I think it's going to be important that we put them in. Thank you, Chair. I'm done.
Now, Lama, corporate governance issues is one. Please just give us one or two of them, as you see them, and we'll incorporate them, even if you give us an example of one or two. Honourable Kwankwa, we're just talking broadly around...
I understand, Chair. May I make a request that I go... excuse me. I go last, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
Primarily because I'm still trying to find my feet. I must apologize on record that I was also held up by staff issues after my apology. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. We'll come back to you last. It makes sense. Then can we then move to SWAT? Your time starts now, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, on 13.2, the role of the shareholder representative, Dr. Causa has referred to the issue relating to the perceived conflict between the Companies Act and the Public and the Broadcasting Act, which there is a document as well. So 13.2.1, where we say evidence provided during testimony indicated that the Minister had direct interaction with certain board members in an attempt to have them resign or removed as board members. I don't think it was without any involvement with Parliament, because remember the Portfolio Committee actually endorsed that firing of those three board members. But I want to add there, full stop, this was on her understanding that the Companies Act, read with the amended Memorandum of Incorporation, gave her the power to remove board members, full stop. I will also give this in writing to you because I have written it to her. This approach was endorsed by the then Portfolio Committee on the 23rd of June 2015. The then Portfolio Committee on Communications in 2015. It's very important to add that. Then the next issue relates to the role of the Ministry and certain board members, which is alluded to in 13.2.1, but the confusion of letters to Mr. Krishnaider and Professor Bongani Kumalo in December,
where they got letters urging them to resign. When they phoned the minister said, but it's not supposed to go to you. So that also is an observation that there is an evidence of misunderstanding in the direct approach to board members relating with requests to them to resign. Now, that is interesting that, Mr. Krishnaidu then, as an observation, indicates that this was an illustration of a dysfunctional ministry. And that is on page 4, which we can consider to be an observation from our side. That incident of the minister or an official phoning him and then saying, no, no, I never intended you, you're an asset, you should not even contemplate resigning. He says this is a classic example of a dysfunctional ministry which compounded the problems of a dysfunctional SABC board. My suggestion is we consider inserting that as an observation. The next issue relates to, Dr. Khoza mentioned the tabling of the Broadcast Amendment Bill with the Portfolio Committee of Communications. This is very important. It must be observed, it must be noted, because that proposal then would remove the role of Parliament totally from the appointment or discharge of board members. Chairperson, that is on the role of the shareholder. Then, when we look at the corporate governance issues, there are a number of observations made by Professor Bongani Kamalo in his written submission, which I think would be very helpful for us to take on board, and I think that we need to consider those. And it's important, for example, the wording is in his written statement on page 3 and 4. For example, the general areas of concern, he says, is failure to observe the differentiation of functions and the management of boundaries between the board and executives. That alludes to corporate governance. 13.4.1, the role and responsibilities. Now this is, that 13.4.1 is between executives themselves, but there's a further element of corporate governance which Professor Bongani Kumala refers to. The board should oversee and supervise the organization, and the executive should implement the board's mandate. That is an important observation. The wording is contained there. The next bullet that is dealt with by the professor is inexperience, inadequate training, indiscipline, familiarity, misdirected or bad corporate politics, internal power contests, poor and diminished business ethics are among the causes of governance failures at the SABC. That again is an observation that is there. Test me before us, we can make that observation as well. Chairperson, there is also here in his recommendation, and this could possibly, could possibly come under the previous one relating to the shareholder, the role of the shareholder representative, where he says the board is appointed by the shareholder and is accountable and derives its mandate from the shareholder, to whom it is answerable. The SABC experience has demonstrated that shareholders or shareholder representatives need orientation and training to the greatest extent to understand their role. This could be an observation that we can make. And this again is on page 5 of his document. The SABC board was not adequately empowered by the shareholder representative. The point is to underline that the primary and ultimate responsibility of the board is to the SABC, and the shareholder is ultimately responsible for the same. So there's a question of training, corporate governance, and observation there that is evidence before us. Chairperson, I think the then when one goes on to just look at one or two of the further issues that I've made some short notes on. 13.4.5, we make use of the word in the a deal, obviously must be multi-choice agreement. to a private monopoly, and I'm not sure if the word monopoly is right there, whether one should use company or monopoly, but again, do we indicate, one presumes that is multi-choice there. The accountability, the next page, we've already dealt with that, the walkout showing disrespect for Parliament and the Constitution. Chairperson, I want to take to the 13.6 and to the end of that where we deal with the presence of the State Security Agency within the working environment. I would presume that that statement, there would be recommendations that must be investigated further. But I mentioned the issue of the flighting of a 7-minute praise song to the COO on current affairs programs, whether one should make an observation about that. I put that question to Dr. Ngubane whilst he answered it about local content, but whether it is, and that is an observation we should make as well, the cost involved in that and whether it is appropriate. I initially understood it was in a news program, but in a current affairs program. The 13.7, parliamentary oversight, 13.7.1 is a very strong statement that is made. The Portfolio Committee on Communications lacked the urgency in addressing the removal of 3 board members without the involvement of Parliament, contributed towards the dysfunction at which one presumes. But that statement needs discussion. It's not a question of urgency. It was very clear that portfolio committee was, for use of a better word, pressurized by the minister to accept the fact that the Companies Act trumped the Broadcasting Act at that time. And that portfolio committee accepted the firing of the 3 board members by the board and not by Parliament. And that is a resolution in Parliament. So that, we need to look at that clause very carefully. And if one considers the reporting about that exact meeting that took place on the 23rd of June 2015, and I apologize for not putting this to the minister in my limited time, but it is there, the minister said it's not the issue of Parliament to decide whether the Companies Act or the Broadcasting Act is determined. Obviously, we pass the laws. It is for us to say which trumps. And she says it's for the courts to say no. The courts say what is the intention of Parliament. So, Chair, that is my brief comment on those. Thank you very much.
So, it's now Honourable Mokoena. Yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to go back, Chair, to the board. I think there wasn't adequate training of the board. There were 2 chairpersons here, in particular Maguve and Ngubane, who seemed clearly not understand their responsibility. They seemed clearly not to know what was happening at the SABC. So I think the issue of training the board is of utmost importance. The shareholder, the role of the shareholder. I think it must be noted, Chair, that the shareholder was actively trying to centralize power in her office and removing it, one, from the president, 2, from parliament, from everybody else, and to put it in her office. And I think that is a gross flouting of one, her duties in her office, but I think also crossing lines of separation of powers. And she also failed to rein in the SABC board. They were running amok. They were doing literally what they liked. They could go to the public and tell them that they don't recognize Parliament. And the minister was just quiet. She ran an SABC that got weakened to a point where there was literally one member and nothing happened. She failed completely in her duty to exercise her oversight role as a shareholder. And then I think the chapter on parliamentary oversight should then follow directly after the shareholder. Because I think they then failed to hold her accountable. I think where it is, it's divorced from where I think it's directly involved in or directly following on the role of the shareholder. And under the parliamentary oversight, they failed on many issues. It's not just the issue of the dismissal of it. They failed to understand the changes of the MOI. They failed to... Sorry?
We failed.
Yeah, we failed. No, they... they, we. No, we failed to... Yeah, we failed dismally to understand the documents that run the SABC, and it was our role to make sure that those changes don't happen. The fact that we're sitting with a Broadcasting Act that the minister wants to change as well, I think, you know, that must be noted in the strongest of terms. It seems the portfolio committee is not paying attention. I think is something that must be. Under legal status, page 26. Legal status and governance. It must be noted that the Broadcast Act is now in front of Parliament, and that the minister is trying to shift or to centralize power with that document. As an observation, I think and then corporate governance. You know, there's a lot of confusion now about responsibilities, who does what, and so on and so forth. The other thing that I forgot. I apologize. Under the shareholder, in the Broadcast Act, Chapter 8 says that the minister must establish a South African Broadcast Production Advisory Body to advise him or her on how the development, production and display of local television and radio content can be supported. It then outlines the role of this advisory body. Now, the role of the lack of such a body was manifest in the confusion that we saw in issues of local content, of what should be aired, and so on and so forth. And I think her lack of instituting that body was a serious oversight. And it's something that must be looked at. And that's part of how she... she did not adhere to the Broadcasting Act. She must read the Broadcasting Act and then establish the advisory body. Because that advisory body will then help with... Okay, I'll come to that. Under corporate governance, there's serious confusion about the roles of everybody there. Who does what and so on and so forth. The fact that local the issues of policy, journalistic policy, lies within the COO's office. And we've been getting information through submissions that roles have been changed, so and so has taken from this to that, and we don't know what she does there, and so on and so forth. We must look at, there must be an entire... or maybe that's a recommendation, but the roles are confused. in the entire SABC, not just centrally, but also in the regional offices there. Accountability, we must be very strong on that. The board is extremely rebellious. And then the issue of journalistic matters and related matters, because then the advisory body, if the minister had established one, it would then assist in local content policy and all sorts of other things it's well within their scope. That's what they're supposed to deal with. But the lack of such a body has then brought up all these issues about 30, 70, 90, 10 local content issues, policy on fairness and so on and so forth, and also participation of the public. These are all issues that should have been looked at, and they never happened. This is the reason why the SABC is in the state that it's in, because there's no one advising anybody, and there's no framework that is being followed. Testimony, we looked at that. Yeah, that's me.
Okay, 10 minutes, somebody's going to make sure that the tea is ready at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. So, Honorable Kubisa, you've got exactly 10 minutes, and after that we'll break for tea and come and deal with the second session. Please put your mic off, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to begin where I started. Number one, that when you look at 13.1.3 on the issues that were brought by the AG and they were disregarded, I want to repeat that there seemed to be some history that was there before of total disregard of duty. I want to say the board acts within the constitutional and legislative mandate, in as much as we all do, that there is a constitution first, there is a legislation that governs how we work, there is a Companies Act, and all of this legislation, you just disregard everything. That says to me the lull and lackluster attitude emanates from some history that has been going on. And that brings in the issue of the Portfolio Committee failing to do its task. Because when you've got the Auditor General's report before you as the Portfolio Committee, that raises or it rings some alarm bells. What do you do? Why are you not constantly moving nearer to the board, to SABC, to say when they come to report, this must be corrected as a matter of urgency? Now, that says we, from the side of Parliament, let that kind of gravitas on the issues, dealing with the issues promptly as they came. So this thing would go on and on and on, because they would come. It doesn't mean that the board didn't come to Parliament. It kept on coming to before the Portfolio Committee. Yet there were these issues that have been there for quite some time, and the new board therefore found it easy to get away with it. So I'm bringing in here the history that isn't great. I'm bringing here the failure by the board, failure by the Portfolio Committee to act on the AG's report, because the AG's report should have galvanized the Portfolio Committee to take action and to alert the honorable members that there are serious corporate governance deficiencies in the SAPC. So now, as we sit here, we need to re-evaluate the PC's oversight approach but we may say it's embedded within the constitution. It's embedded within the constitution and also within our rules. So something very drastic has got to be done by the portfolio committee. Devise a new strategy to strengthen it and maximize oversight function within the parameters of the law. So that to me is important. Then when it comes to interference, political interference by the minister, that is very serious, Chairperson. I think it's a point that has to be taken into cognizance, because it seems there was an intent to centralize power. Centralize power to the extent that everything must rest with the minister. And it's surprising, because there is legislation governing executive powers of the minister. But the way things have been happening, the interference with the board and also administrative matters, the encroachment, which was unwarranted, that is an observation that we need to tackle as the ad hoc committee. And also, Chairperson, I want to talk on this issue of corporate responsibility. That I have a feeling that we need to piece this corporate veil. What do I mean by that? This piecing of the corporate veil. A need to hold individuals personally accountable for their actions. Because it's easy for the individual who acts wrongly, acts within his own interest, and then it will be used under the guise of the collective. There must be no place for individuals to hide behind the powers of their office to escape liability for decisions that they have made, which were not motivated by the best interest of the SAPC, making individuals to account, rather than hiding under the guise of the collective. Also, Chairperson, it is noted that time was not of essence from the side of the board, from the side of the portfolio committee, and from the side of the management, that if issues were raised by the AG to have them corrected immediately, they were not corrected. They will go on unabatedly and no one would care about it. And in the meantime, wrong decisions were taken. And this then comes to what I alluded earlier on, skills-based, skills-driven kind of board. How is the board appointed? Of course, there's law. There's the role of the portfolio committee, role of the public, role of the president, role of everyone. But one has a certain feeling that from now on, perhaps we must come with the suggestion that the board must be nominated in a transparent way. Let me say, come with the proposal to the legislation that the appointment of the board should be done transparently, like it was done with the public protector, so that we know who's getting in there, who's getting onto the board. So these issues, Chairperson, that I want to put forward to you, and I'll comment on other issues later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I will break for tea. Just before we break for tea, I know that as we get talking, we somehow conflate recommendations and observations. The last one, Honorable Kubisi, you'll have to... Bob, the last statement you made, you'll have to return to when we do recommendations, because it was not an observation, it's a recommendation, I think. But we'll note it, and we'll continue to refine it going tomorrow. All right, honorable members, we come back at past, and Kwanko, will you be ready at that time? But we can come back to you at the end.
No, quarter to. 15 minutes, quarter to, I beg your pardon. So call an hour. And then after you, because we've given you half an hour, you get a sense of what's happening. Then after him, it'll come to sing and we'll come down this way. And hopefully by then we'll be done by 12 o'clock. Certainly we must be done with this by lunchtime, because we need to get into the meat of recommendations. All right. You back at quarter to?
Over there.
All right, we'll push for the next hour, see how far we are, but I think the general consensus is that at least if we've done with the broad deliberations by 1 o'clock on this topic, that we can then get into the meat after lunch in terms of the recommendations, because that's going to take much longer and it'll have much more personal considerations. That's going to take a bit longer. So I'm informed will be at 1 o'clock, so we've got just over 60 minutes to do that. So if members can bear that in mind, and then our target is to have done with the broad deliberations at lunch, and then we'll get on to the other one. And towards the end, please remind me, towards the end we'll make a suggestion as to how you guys assist us in terms of the deliberations of today, without deviating from what we're doing now. But we will put a proposal on the table in terms of ensuring that we have a document that a document that will afford us productive discussion on Tuesday. But we'll make that proposal later on. As we close, I think Honorable Kwankwo was the next, and then after Kwankwo we will go to Singh and come down this row and end up with Honorable Killian. Hopefully Honorable Killian will be the last before lunch, and then we'll move from there. We will go that way, come down, and we'll end that way with you, Killian. It's this way, and then we'll end with you. Honorable Kwankwo, the floor is yours. Your 10 minutes starts now, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. The first issue that we'd like to highlight is what I think under issues of the board and its governance issues. It has to do with, we think it was an observation on our part, or I think we can put it forward as an observation that the board or the various boards that were at SABC seem to lack understanding of their fiduciary duties, as well as the understanding of the relationship that needed to exist between the administration and the board itself, and the board and the shareholder representative. I think that came out strongly in the testimony of Professor Maguva, even though he didn't state it like that, but his testimony demonstrated that there was a lack of understanding of that relationship. I think maybe, Chairperson, since our mandate is to look into the fitness of the board to hold office, it could be elevated together with one of the points, paragraph 13.1.5, which speaks also something similar. They could be elevated more to the top of the observations, because I think they do speak to the mandate, to the mandate of the portfolio committee to some extent. I know it's not a finding or a recommendation, it's an observation, I was just saying. The other issue, Chairperson, is a matter whether, I wouldn't know, you'd guide me here, whether it would fall under recommendations or observations. During the testimony, remember, people mentioned or talked about the fact that the Guptas at some point attempted to rebrand the morning news show at SABC. Would we then not say that there was an observation that maybe there were attempts to capture this the state or the broadcaster, the national broadcaster, as you'll guide me, Chair, how you want to use it. I think the other issue, Chairperson, which is also very pertinent while we're talking under board-related matters, would be not only were we able to pick up and talk about issues that had to do with fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure, but what we also picked up is that there were no consequences. You know, there were no consequences for those people who have spent money irregularly and wasted it. It should also maybe be captured as an observation, because it points directly to the failure of the board to play its role. Chairperson, if you then go to the role in particular of the shareholder, I remember that Dr. Khoza mentioned, she said something about 13.2.2, where it says there were allegations that the minister was actively involved. She proposed that we put undue influence. I remember Kalidas, is it Kalidas or Kadilas or something? Kalidas raised. In her testimony, she used the word undue influence and being placed under duress. I'm just saying in terms of the right terminology to use in that sentence, Chairperson. We also have, if you look at Chairperson, there was an issue that we spoke about, the role of the minister in what happened at SABC, and to say that the minister herself, apart from her alleged or interference at SABC, she herself seemed to be not very clear about the bounds within which she needed to operate. That goes back to the testimony and the written submission that was made by Professor Kumalo, who said that shareholder representatives themselves seem to lack training, experience and understanding of their role. I think, Chairperson, sorry to go back to the board again. I think that point is valid for board members as well, because as an observation, it seems that all of them lack experience, not all of them, rather, but some of them lack experience and understanding of what is expected of them. I think then, Chairperson, there's the issue where we're saying the mismanagement, the issue around state security. You will if this matter was discussed extensively in the sessions before I joined the committee, but we are citing it here as 13.4.7, for example, as an observation. We're saying SABC employees were subjected to security agency interference. Was that an observation, or was it something that we just had? Were we ever able to test that or to look into that before we call it an observation? I'm just asking you as a question. Maybe what we might have to do is to find a way of rephrasing it so that it speaks to what was discussed and what we understood to be said by the people, because we might have to be able to make a recommendation on it. The failure, for example, the failure by the minister to understand her limits would to some extent be what has caused her to communicate. I'm not making any excuses, but I'm saying that we could link that to 13.2.1. Going back and forth, Chairperson, there also seems on the part of the boards that have played an oversight role over the SABC to be a lack of understanding of the Broadcasting Act. And that also goes, for instance, for the executive, if you like. Where am I drawing this? Because if you look at the point which talks about the walkout of the management and the utterances that were made later on, there was a clear lack of understanding, first, of the mandate of the SABC, right, what it needed to do and what the Broadcasting Act says insofar as the commercial aspect of that mandate and what needed to happen. So I think it's something that we should also add, that both the boards, the board members, and the executive members, remember, because some of them are executive members of the board, they demonstrated a complete lack of understanding of the Broadcasting Act, and therefore one could say that including their mandate and what was expected of them, which then affected or made it impossible for those who were in the board to assess the effectiveness of the management. Remember, if they don't know what is their mandate and what is expected of them, it would not be easy to know whether they are going astray or doing what is expected of them. That lack of understanding, one could also argue, that is what contributed to the mayhem where some of the managers thought that they were board members. They could act on behalf of the board and do as they pleased, and so on. That is all for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, because we are deliberating, even if it's a point that was made by a speaker previous to you, you shouldn't feel restricted, because it just shows the emphasis of the point that we are making. We will find a way of collating it. So no holy cows, both in what is in this document and what you want to put. The only request I would make, honourable members, is that when you introduce a brand new concept that might not be here, it helps us just to say, in reading this, this one is a new one, so that we are clear that it's a new concept that you are, or if you are arguing that we remove one totally, because it's not only about additions. Some of them that are here currently you might feel are just inappropriate. You should be then saying remove it totally or add that one totally. But there are no holy cows. We'll argue them strongly on Tuesday. Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my understanding is that observations and findings would automatically lead to recommendations. So there may be some issues which I will raise here which have already contained in the document, but I believe that they require emphasizing as observations for us to be able to make recommendations that if the committee agrees. I want to start off where Honorable Konkwa left about the evidence that was submitted that Mr. Phil Molefe had discussions with TNA to establish a news channel. I think that's an observation that we need to note so that, you know, if we make a recommendation to future boards, we know how they should handle these kind of discussions. So I'm just supporting what he said in that regard. I just want to go to the 13.2, the shareholder, and agree with Honorable Khoza and Konkwa that we need to, I believe, bring in a few more elements in what we observe there. For example, there was conflicting testimony by the executive authority and certain members of the board. And if you look at 12.3, the repeated 12.2, you'll see what I'm talking about, where we got 12.2, where the minister denied she interfered in editorial policy, but then Ms. Kalida said something else, and the minister denied that she had signed the MOI. So I think we need to observe these things. So as we make recommendations, we can refer to that testimony early on. So that's something that I think we need, because there was no corroboration between what the minister said and some of the evidence with the witnesses had said. So I thought we should bring that in. Then, if we look at, I just noticed that 13.42 and 13.44 are repeated as 13.54 and 13.56 exactly, word for word. 13.42 and 13.44 are repeated as 13.54 and 13.56. Then on the walkout, 13.52, I see we've got here that the walkout by the SABC board on 7 December had shown total disregard and disrespect. It was not only the board. I think it was also acting executive managers and other officials, although we're not going to worry about the legal teams, but it was not only, I believe, the board. It was others that also walked out and showed disrespect for Parliament and the Constitution. Then on the issues that ICASA had raised. Now, ICASA had referred to the Charter and then evidence that we've received, you've received, I have received, would suggest that there were unilateral decisions taken on programming content by certain individuals that might be ultra vires. And then we need to observe that, so that it can be corrected moving forward. Further to that, ICASA had also given certain directives to the board, which they didn't adhere to, because in their presentation they say to us here that I think it's the 20th May 2016 issue, where those issues were never attended to, but yet there were directives or injunctions from ICASA. So we might just have to look at what ICASA had said to the board and how we deal with it as observations moving forward. So that's that. And then, of course, I've touched with the issue about establishing a news channel, because I think that's important for us to observe. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Oliver.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, my first bite is on 13.5.3. I just want... Oh, sorry. My first bite is on 13.5.3, Chair. I want to appeal to the team that is cleaning the document that instead of citing it as a reluctance by SABC to give out some documents, remember there are documents we never received. So it's not reluctance, it's refusal to give us those documents. Then in 13.5.6, over and above what is cited there, include in the same bullet or in the same note the issue of the payment of legal fees of Maguve. Remember, when we asked him, he said up to the 7th December, he understood the SABC to be responsible for that, though it was never something that he was bold enough to stand for it. My last bite, Chair, is on 13.8.2. In the testimony that was given, I did not pick this thing of political interference coming sharply with every witness. It was in the case of Ms. Tshabalala that she indicated that there was interference. And we are still having a question mark on that, as it is already cited here. So how correct are we when we are promoting it to say it's gross political interference? My view was, let us not elevate it that much. Let's mention it without elevating it, because we base everything we argue on testimony given. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Waters.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the fitness of the board, I think generally, as an observation, we've got, from myself, is that we've got to get people that are fit for purpose. And quite clearly, people have been appointed to the board on several occasions or several terms that are not fit for purpose. They're either there to do the batting of a political agenda, or they're there just to, you know, close their eyes and go along with the abuse of the system. And so I think it's very important that as MPs we cite that as a finding, as an observation, and in order to do a recommendation that the Portfolio Committee on Communications really jacks up the process of appointing, how they go about interviewing and appointing the board. Having said that, if I could move to 13.31, Chair, where it says there's urgent need for clarity on legislation that takes precedence in relation to the appointment of the dismissal of board members. The fact is we have a principled act, which is the Broadcasting Act. Where the Broadcasting Act is silent, obviously then people fall back on the Companies Act or the PFMA, whichever legislation is appropriate. But to say that there's need for clarity, there is clarity. This is... People who claim that there's no clarity are using the excuse to drive their political agenda and to create confusion. There's clarity. The law's there. So I think we need to reword that section and tighten that up. Section 13.3.3, I think here we should just say this is in violation of Section 96.2 of the Constitution as well as the Executive Ethics Code. I can get you the right section there. I should have actually had it right. It's 2.3D. Use their position or any information entrusted to them to enrich themselves or improperly benefit any other person. So there. And as far as 13.34 is concerned, we say here that the current funding model is unsuitable. I think we should change that to would appear to be unsuitable. If we go on to 13.4.1 about corporate governance, where it says the role and responsibilities of the GCO and the CEO, etc., was not always clear, but it should be clear. They're supposed to have contracts, even if they are temporary. And in those employment contracts, their roles should be clearly stipulated. And if they adhere to the contracts, there would be no confusion. And people wouldn't be stepping on each other's toes and encroaching...
Francis Alon. I think we're losing you, but we get the point.
Am I talking too fast?
Yeah.
I'm trying to say, okay.
After 13.3.4, you referred to the role clarifications.
Yes.
Okay.
And there, the employment contracts should clearly stipulate what their roles are. 13.4.2, okay, that's a recommendation. Where am I? Yeah, I suppose it would be, but Yes, yes. I'm just in 1345. We should say that the PFMA was violated here, in contravention to the PFMA. I think we need to strengthen our case. Every time a particular act or the Constitution is violated, we need to state it, just so it strengthens our case when we come to recommendations later on. No. In 13.4.5, the PFMA was violated, yeah. Or transgressed, if you want, in a more, what's the word? No, that's a weaker word. I think violation is stronger. 13.4.6, where it says certain executive members of the SABC change the reporting lines. I think we should name those people. Do we have those names? When we say certain, I mean, did we ever get those names? Because it's important. If we did, we need to, I think it's important to say that, who it was. With regards to the, let me open my computer, the State Security Agency, we must put in 13.4.7, Chair, we must please add state in state security, and the interference that occurred. Honourable Kwankwa asked, did we ever get evidence to this regard? If I can just read this paragraph, please, from Right to Know, is that in January 2014, the SABC chairperson, Mr. Shabalala, reportedly told staff in an editorial meeting that their communications may be intercepted by intelligence services, apparently in relation to perceived information leaks. This incident was made public by the representatives of the Broadcast and Electronics Media and Allied Workers Union, and at the time was reported to the committee by Mrs., and I hope I pronounce the following name correctly, Kubile. Is it right? No, it's not. Anyway, submission. According to accounts at the time, so we got the submission here, so we've got the information. According to the account at the time, Mrs. Shabalala incorrectly cited the SABC's office status as a national key point to justify possible interference of communications. Right. So we do have evidence in that regard, and I would say in 13.4.7 we do tighten it up. It says here the SABC employees were subjected to state security interference, while some more important task of vetting of employees was neglected. So what this gives the impression is that it's okay to interfere with officials at SABC, but they should have actually just focused on the more important task of vetting. And I think that needs to be tightened up. Do you hear what I'm saying? So we need to look at that. As far as 13.6.3 is concerned, again with the State Security Agency, I think that is, I've written notes here, but I think it's a recommendation about who gave the order, etc., and why were they there, so that we can talk about later. There's 13.7.1, Chair. The Portfolio Committee on Communications lacked the urgency in addressing the removal of the three board members. They didn't lack the urgency. They were derelict in their duty as a committee. They didn't lack any urgency. They turned a blind eye, quite frankly, and allowed the minister to continue to abuse the system. And I think we need to say that there. They were derelict in their duty. Okay, and that's all I've got to say, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Fanda.
Thanks, Chair. I'd firstly like to agree with Honourable Khoza in that we include a recommendation, include an observation about the Broadcasting Amendment Bill. And that's something which we can discuss further then in recommendations. And then I'd also like to include under section 13.6 a section on the 90% local content and 70% local content on TV news, how we received evidence that the SABC board was not consulted on this decision and that it was a unilateral decision by the COO of the SABC. And then on the role of the shareholder, 13.2.
As I usually do, I would like to include what sections of law, the role of the shareholder in this whole saga, what laws that violated. Now, it's common cause that the Minister of Communications is not allowed to interfere in the affairs of the SABC. Her role in communications is drafting and publishing communications policy. That doesn't mean that she has her role with the SABC and her entities is hands-off. She has control in the form of oversight. So the fact that she interfered in the affairs of the SABC by encouraging them to appoint this Mr. Motsoeneng as COO is a violation of Section 92(3) of the Constitution, which requires her to provide Parliament with full and regular reports concerning matters under her control. So she violated the Constitution there. By interfering in the SABC, she also violates the Executive Ethics Code, particularly Section 2.2D, which says that she may not use her position or any information entrusted to her to enrich themselves or improperly benefit any other person. 2.3D, by influencing the SABC board to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng, she used her position as a minister to unfairly influence the SABC board and unfairly benefit Mr. Motsoeneng. So she's therefore also in violation of the Executive Ethics Code. She's furthermore in violation of the Powers and Privileges and Immunities Act, particularly Section 2E. And she violated that section by refusing to give Parliament full disclosure on what happened at the SABC. She claimed not to know anything, she wasn't involved, when evidence presented to us was very clear that she interfered in the appointment of Mr. Motsoeneng. She told board members to report to her directly about whether or not they should continue to be employed at the SABC. So she interfered. And by doing so and not being honest with Parliament, she's violated the Powers and Privileges and Immunities Act, and I'd like that included in our observations, and I'm happy to type that out for you.
All right, just as a general rule, members, there where you refer specifically to whatever legislation or whatever, if you could assist us with that, or everybody, PFMA Section 38(1)(c) or Powers and Privileges, just assist us when you when you supply that to us, and we will try and fit it in at the proper place. Honourable Chauk.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start with 13.51, Chair. That deals with the accountability. In the first line there, Chair, we identify a administration leadership. I want to propose that we, as the accounting authority, we put it as a board rather than just putting a general administration leadership, which is the first line there. But just to emphasize on this paragraph, Chair, if you'll recall from evidence that day, especially what the Chairperson Maguve said, that they were reluctant to appear because they derived their funding from public, not from public, from advertising and all of that. Therefore, only 3% of the funding comes from government. I think it's an area that needs to be re-emphasized to the fact that even whatever that they raise outside still belongs to, it's still public money. So therefore, the issues of accountability becomes very critical. Now, Chair, in our engagement, you'll remember what led to Ngubane to come in. The mandate was to deal with the current board, but we end up having to go back to the previous boards. And I think maybe it will be a new area that we'll have to look at, in a sense that problems started from the Ngubane board, because that's where you begin to see breakdown of the law. There was an SIU report. Obviously, we have not gone into the detail of that SIU report that led, in fact, to the collapse of that board. But it's important that we sort of reflect of this systematic
mismanagement and how a number of boards, in fact, have collapsed throughout the process. Then you look at the next board that followed, the Ngubane board becomes the Chabalala board, interim board, and you look at these activities, Chair. I'm not going to be specific to any of the a points here, but I said these are new areas that we'll have to look at. The entering of the multi-choice contract from the interim board and the contestation, therefore, seems from that end. I think it's an area that we'll have to look at, Chair, meaning that in the incoming interim board, we'll definitely we'll have to recommend something. We must be very clear as to what is it that, when we go to recommendations now, what is it that we'll want to recommend the interim board to look at specifically coming out of this particular engagement. Because I'll believe that, Chair, if we don't do that, we may have failed, in fact, to instruct and to give direction in the process, and will not be able to dig deeper into these systematic problems that have figured politically and administrative, meaning that you look at the minister, starting with Diana Pule, the minister, what happened and what led her to be removed as a minister there, and then you can cite them throughout. Till today, this level of interference between the issue of accountability, separation of power, that understanding will have to be clearly sort of defined as we move to the recommendations. Now, the process of appointment of the board chair, it's an open process. Members of the public participate. Maybe we'll want to emphasize the point so that it's not a closed thing, but it's a well open thing in the process that members of the public now know, like we have done with the public protector. But the issue that I want to bring in here, Chair, is that through evidence before us, the role of state security has been misplaced here. The state security has been playing a role of dealing with issues of human resource, you know, interviewing, harassing, engaging at the lowest level without dealing with their core mandate, which was firstly to deal with issues of a clearance. You know, so in the new process, what we'll expect maybe at a new insertion that we'll do, maybe it will come again to the recommendation, Chair, will be to really identify at what point the state security comes in and what role will the state security play in the process of the nomination, so that by the time you finish with the nomination of members of the board, state security will have cleared them by that time. So it's an area that we'll deal with it when we move to the issue of the establishment of the new board. So those are just my few points for now. Thank you very much.
Honourable Kelly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I believe that paragraph 13.3.3 should actually be relocated under shareholder, because it refers to the level of ministerial involvement. So that's just a suggestion. And Chairperson, I think I would like to advocate that we reconsider the headings. I have mentioned it a little earlier, but obviously I'm not hard and fast on it. We can look at that again on Tuesday. Maybe we can collapse everything, because as it happens now, we've seen there are duplicates under specific headings. Maybe we can actually just list our sort of observations. But let's look at that on Tuesday. Chair, I would like to suggest that we also look, if we maintain the headings, if we can perhaps reconsider the 13.3 headings. And I'm not 100% sure. We make reference to governance under 13.4 as well as under 13.3. On the one side we're saying legal status and governance, on the other side we're saying corporate governance. My suggestion would be that we actually relook that and perhaps talk about legislative frame or non-compliance with legislation or something like on the heading of 13.3. I would like to also suggest that 13.3.1, that we take line sentence 1 and actually relocate that to recommendations. Because we have found under observation that there is an interchangeable use of the two acts. And then from there it moves on to the MOI and its amendment, etc. I agree with would appear to be unsustainable at what Honourable Mike Waters has said as far as the funding model of the SABC is concerned. I'm however concerned because we should make reference to appear because we did not really have anybody who provided adequate evidence that this is the financial position, you know, etc. So I think we should rather steer away from just making such a pronouncement. We can make reference to appears to be. Chair, then I would like to go to 13.4.1. I would suggest that we use there the role and the reporting lines, role, responsibilities, and reporting lines of the group chief executive, or we can just make reference to the executive committee. Was unclear. Was not clearly delineated, and performance management contracts appear not to have been in place. There was a policy, but evidence before us was that there were no performance contracts and performance bonuses were just paid willy-nilly without, evaluating the performance of the individual. Also, Chair, I would suggest that we capture the heading under corporate governance. This is more a management matter. And if I look at that, it is contained in the Act where the role and responsibility of non-executive and executive members are also clearly indicated. And I think we should have a separate paragraph in addition to the group chief executive, the chief financial officer, chief operating officer. We should have a paragraph which referred to the role and responsibilities between executive and non-executive board members was diffused. Reason being that section 14 describes that the executive committee is accountable to the board. And that did not happen. There were different people that led evidence to that effect. And it goes further, Section 14, stating that the Executive Committee must perform such functions as may be determined by the Board. Now, because of the roles, the confusion of the roles or the diffusion of the roles, that did not happen. So the Board did not hold the Executive Committee accountable. And that actually contributed to their own failures. Then there was general non-compliance with existing legislation by the executive. Yes, the board is the accounting authority, but clearly the permanently appointed executives are responsible to follow the PFMA, to follow Treasury regulations, to follow the Act, for instance, revision of policies. They have no authority to revise policies. It must be presented to the board in terms of the Act. So there was clear non-compliance with the Broadcasting Act and with the PFMA. Then I also wanted to bring in, and I don't know exactly if it falls there under legal, but we should just pin in the ground our concerns about possible risks for the SABC with regards to board meetings where there was either lack of a quorum or where no decision of the board was taken to implement or to contract on behalf of the SABC. The flouting of supply chain management has dire consequences. And we will have to pin it down so that we can take the matter forward to the interim board to review board decisions and to take corrective steps so as not to expose that authority. Chair, as far as accountability is concerned, I think we can say in 13.5.1 the SABC, and we should rather have board and executive committee instead of administration, did not understand, I would like to insert, understand the public mandate in terms of the charter and the act, and did not feel the need to account to Parliament owing to the fact that the funding from the national fiscus was minuscule, owing to the fact that in their view, the funding from the national fiscus was minuscule. Now, remember, it is not about how big the funding is from the National Assembly. The public mandate lies in the Act and in the PFMA, and they must account to Parliament. And there was some other lack of understanding. I would like to add that line under 3.5.1 to say this demonstrates a total misunderstanding and disregard for the Broadcasting Act, the PFMA, and Parliament. Maybe we could say the Constitution, I don't know. Then, lastly, Chair, I agree that we should move parliamentary oversight, but then when we move to, you know, to under the shareholder, and then it's just as far as testimony is concerned, I would like to suggest that we, and actually we should have it throughout, I would prefer us using the term when we speak about the board, not interchange it with terminology such as accounting authority, because then sometimes we can confuse matters. Because the PFMA makes the board the accounting authority, we can perhaps emphasize the board as the accounting authority, but we should never use the accounting authority. We should instead use the board. And, yeah. So that is as far as that is concerned. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm prepared to make some of my proposals. I'm prepared to submit it to the administration so that it's easier to understand where what fits in.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The threat of spending the long weekend in Cape Town has lots of magical effects on members. All of a sudden we did everything. But Honourable Members, thank you very much. I can tell you that we've got probably 4 pages of this hardcover with the points that have been made. Of course, some of them might have been duplicated. We will try and collate it. I'll come to you, sir. But just where members have referred to specific sections, if you could send that to us so that we don't have that problem. And also where members want to introduce a new subject, as much as we've tried to capture it, if you could just put it in. I'm saying if it's a brand new one, if you could put it in, we'll put it there, and even if we mark it as new so that you've got it. There weren't too many of them, but if there were, you all have our email addresses. If you put it in there, it makes our life easier. If it's brand new, your wording would be more understandable to everybody else, if just generally, and this will go across to even the next section. So where they are brand new, if you could actually try and type in the wording. The rest I think we will attempt to put together as best as possible, and I'm informed that it's doable on condition that you give a specific reference to the sections of legislation that you have alluded to or you have raised here. Honourable Mogwena.
No, Chair. It's just something I spoke to you about earlier on, but I think I need to make a public note of it. It seems that the advisory board to the minister was established recently, and I think we need to correct that. But then the recommendation would then be that they must be more active in their work. We don't even know who they are, so maybe that process needs to be investigated as to what happened there, but they need to be more active so that they can assist the minister in her thing. Can I add one more thing? Given the evidence that we received from various witnesses around the issue of TNA, New Age Media, the rebranding of the SABC News channel, and so on and so forth, it is my submission that we should recommend, that the committee has observed a possible state capture. Was it there? Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
All right. I'm not going to add anything except just to... It's a thin line between grammar and maybe content, but it's more content. If members go to 1314, in our document, Cindy, we have fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred, 5.1 billion. That's actually not correct. Fruitless and wasteful is about 92 million. That 5.1 billion is irregular expenditure. There's a major difference between fruitless and reckless fruitless and wasteful and irregular. So if we could correct that, irregular is 5.1 billion. Fruitless is, I think it's 92.3 million or something like that. So I'm saying the rest I'll leave to your wisdom. We will capture your one. Honourable members, you've had a sense of what is coming out. We've got 25 minutes before lunch. Now, I don't know if there were things that you suppressed because you were trying to measure your time, although many people, without being suppressed, were well within their time. We can use these 25 minutes to try and narrow some areas where they are clearing whatever so that it helps us. Otherwise, if somebody's got a brainwave of something else that you want to put in, you've got 25 minutes. But if you're going to go the brainwave route, then everybody's going to have just one bite. But if you're going to go the route of trying to reach some sorts of committee position, especially where they are very glaring ones, then we can open it up for general debate. So I'm not sure if this is a brand new thing or you want to go to try and narrow some of these things down. Chauke.
No, maybe mine is a small point, Chair, under 1371, on the issue of the role of Parliament. Through the witness presentation, in particular the former chairperson, Chabalala, you remember there was clear that there was already a stalemate between the board and the committee, which in fact again led to that issue of her qualification, which was reported. I'm not sure how do we locate it, Chair, that the stalemate between the board and the committee, because it's not purely that the portfolio committee failed to do. Yes, I know that, and link it up again, Chair, with this failure to recognize or to accept accountability because therefore we are not funded, we are not using state resource. Can we maybe try and break something out of that? If not, then I'm still fine. But I wanted to bring in this issue of stalemate between the board and the committee of parliament. Because it's not just purely that the committee did not want to do its work or did not do its work, but there was already an attitude towards the board that failed, in fact, to comply and working with the committee with all the issues that were raised by the witness, Chabalala. I'm not sure if we were to deal with that or we can just note it maybe somewhere it can fit. I'm not sure.
I thought somewhere a member raised the, and whatever word you've used, whether it was, I don't know what word you used, Honourable, I think it was you, Waters, somebody said they were not effective and then you used the word of, I think, derelict or something like that. Would it not fit in there? Because surely there can't be an argument about the board unaccountable to Parliament. Surely it can't be an argument. I mean, just now all, everybody was saying, where there's no argument for each, for instance, which law takes precedence, we shouldn't even put it here as if we have doubt. Now, I don't think there's a doubt between there can't be a stalemate. It just cannot be a stalemate between the board. And if there is a stalemate, I'm sure there were, we've said the committee, us, not that committee, Parliament, needs to understand its role. I'm sure it'll be covered there. I'm hoping that it'll be covered there. If it's covered there, it's fine. All right. Are there any areas that members would want to attempt where maybe where we are too far apart or maybe where we're very close together where we can just kill? I mean, there's this one about dysfunctional and non-existent. We can take a decision and then the legal people will come back and say the correct word is so-and-so. But as things stand now, we're going to put in our report the board was dysfunctional stroke non-existent. I'm sure we can put one thing and the legal people will give us the correct word. So it helps us in our going forward. I'm saying that is just one of them. So I'm saying there are very many where we are very close together, or there are those that we might be further apart. I can tell you now that I don't think there's confusion that all over we'll take away the impression that this committee doesn't know which is the supreme law. We can put there and say there was a observation that others didn't understand it, but we can never ever say there that Parliament didn't understand which took precedence. Is there agreement on that one? Is there agreement on that one? I'm saying where it refers to Parliament, we are very clear that it's the Public Broadcasting Act, and we can't then say that for them. So if there's that clarity, we can tick it off here where it refers to Parliament, but we will leave it where there was clear differences. You want to talk? You wanted to say something? Somebody? Oh, sorry, Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Not related to observations, but it's an observation that right at the beginning, when the committee was constituted by Parliament, we started sitting, and there were some challenges with the court and things like that. Now, we haven't made any reference to it in the beginning as part of the story for parliamentarians to know that we did sit, but we adjourned and we did whatever. So I don't know if we should include that as part of the narrative of the history of this committee from the time it started. We just go into the history from the time we called witnesses, etc., etc., etc.
Okay. Remember, if you look to our document, there's something called introduction that we've left blank. So when we populate the introduction, we will fill in some of these things, but we deliberately left it blank until the very last minute. So we would couch it under there, that type of thing. Any generic views? And maybe let's just deal with the generics now. To our colleagues in the gallery, this is the ad hoc committee that is looking at the fitness of the Board of Parliament. I'm sure you're aware of it. And if you're not, I beg your pardon, not the fitness of Parliament. That is the role of the Constitutional Court and you as citizens, but it's in relation to the fitness of the board. And we're busy deliberating. So you're more than welcome. And thank you for showing some sort of interest there. You are welcome. Dealing generic issues or just allow you guys to exhale. You've got 15 minutes to exhale. Please remember your numbers. Okay. Mkwena, when you're bullying me, Bob. Mkwena, and then Swartz, and then Kubis, and then Chauke.
No, I think at the hearings of the portfolio committee, when two members of the board resigned, that committee became non-existent. I mean, the board. I think it was non-existent even before. So at the commencement of this committee, there was no board. So I think that must be made clear that it's non-existent, and that is the observation of this inquiry since its establishment.
Wherever we have dysfunctional, we'll say non-existent. When we refer to the board post October the 5th, that's what you're suggesting. All right, I will do that. Mr. Swartz.
Chair, there is an issue which has been alluded to, but maybe one can capture the whole issue of how the board has failed to look after its staff. Now, there are three elements to that, and one has been related to, and that is the purging of staff members, as is pointed out in the Public Protector's report, but it's a continuing, and that is indicated in some of the documentation we received from SOS. So subsequent to the Public Protector's report, that is continuing. So one could say something, that's the first point, the way that the SABC 8 were dealt with from a labor relations perspective. And then thirdly, the whole issue of the status of the independent contractor agreements, where we received that lengthy document from a large number of staff members from the SABC that have indicated that they were promised that the independent contractor agreements would be converted to employment contracts, and that has not yet happened. Some of them have got up to 30 years experience. So those are three elements that we can make as observations. Obviously, the last issue of the independent contractors is important. It has financial implications. That is important. So I'm just putting it to you as a general, I don't know if it's sufficiently covered already, but I don't think anyone has alluded to the undertakings that were given by the board to convert those independent contractor agreements to full-time employment. And there's a reference in the Auditor General's report where they are paying increased tax of 25% as opposed to the 18% they would be paying if they were fully employed. So it's an issue that goes across the board for SABC staff, and I think it's important for us to make that observation. And that's having, and again, Chair, there's been a lot of criticism of the SABC, but we need to remember there are a lot of very loyal and hardworking people on the SABC.
I agree, Chair.
And that is an element we need to highlight that as well. I mean, we watch sport, we watch a lot of SABC programs, and it's commendable that notwithstanding what's going on at the top level of the SABC, there are still some incredibly hard-working people, and we need to acknowledge and commend that as well.
Sure. Thank you, Chair.
No, I haven't recognized you. And I'm trying to think about what Mr. Swartz is saying, and I don't have a problem with the sentiment. I just don't want this committee to be dragged into, let's say, labor relations issues and so on. And I'm not saying you're dragging us into that, but we must not become a whinging session on the one hand, and we must also not become a session where there's labor relations. But we'll take your point, and again, we'll argue it when we sit on Thursday, because remember, ours is a very specific role, but we will...
You've noted them, have you?
We've noted them. So I'm saying as people speak, because you've got 10 minutes, let's try and stick to what it is that we were intending to do when we were started. After Swartz was Kubisi, Chauke, Killian, and then Fandam. Kubisi?
Thank you very much, Chair. Just wanted to say... It's very important that as a committee we make ourselves as clear as possible. For instance, when I read 13.41, it says the role and the responsibilities of the group chief executive officer, the chief financial officer, and the chief operating officer was not always clear or adhered to. Now, somebody reads this, will ask, we have this individual working within an entity, SABC as a legal persona. Now, what do you mean? Do you mean lines of communication? Do you mean lines of control, administrative lines? What do you mean by this? So, I'm saying, therefore, we need to be as crystal clear as possible. What is it that is meant? Because the CEO, Group CEO, is an individual in an institution with particular responsibility, and the Chief Financial Officer, COO. Does it mean that the lines of communications or control lines were blurred, or it was the usurping of the lines of communication by the other party? So I'm just taking note of that, Chairperson.
Yeah, now all of you must be chairpersons, then you'll
understand that you need to listen carefully and maybe pick it up. I think it was Killian who said, let's clarify it and say lines, reporting lines. So I'm hoping that covers you. It was exactly on that point. He said, let's make it reporting lines. So it has been captured, but we concur. You're basically emphasizing what Honorable Killian has raised. Honorable Chuck.
Thank you very much, Chair. On the issue of the public protector, Chair, I know that the colleagues have already dealt with this part, but we may have to find expression from the recent judgment by the Constitutional Court, especially the expression around the constitutional democracy can only be truly strengthened when there is zero tolerance to culture of impunity, the prospect of good governance are duly enhanced by enforcing accountability, the observance of the rule of law, and respect for every aspect of our constitution as the supreme law of the country. Maybe as we close that whole exercise, Chair, we'll have fulfilled this particular mandate as instructed, in fact, as advanced by the Concord, meaning that the role of Parliament here has taken that particular position. I'm just throwing it. It's an issue that I think it makes a lot of sense for us with the work that we have done so far, that we have met this requirement and we are making sure that there's adherence to the rule of law.
We're not going to even attempt to do it. You'll add that we don't have a problem with it as a committee. Also understand, members, that at some point I'm sure some of you are going to participate in a debate in this thing, so don't take your debating material and put it in here, but it's fine. We will remind you. That's a nice closing for your debate or opening for your debate, but we're not going to put it in our report now, but if you feel strongly about it, we'll find a way of that being a underlying or overriding lesson. Honorable Killian. You've got 2 minutes, and because after you, Swandam will also have 2 minutes, otherwise you...
Fine.
At 1 o'clock, say, Val, 2 minutes maximum.
Chairperson, no. The matter actually just resides about the role of Parliament, parliamentary oversight, and obviously it actually belongs more in the recommendation section, but I just thought let's just reflect on that a little bit. Typically, members are appointed to a portfolio committee, and the problem with that is that they are not always properly inducted with the sort of legislative framework within which they have to operate. Now, Honourable Swartz has referred to shareholder induction, but I think we should also take the matter forward to parliamentary support and members' induction. So I just wanted to park that issue. Second issue that I wanted to bring in is under the shareholders paragraph, the responsibility to, can I say, conduct oversight over the entities without interfering. That thin line. It would be interesting to see what comes out in our next draft, but I think we should make the comment there that in all three role players, be it the board, the executive, and the shareholder, there was a confusion of roles and responsibilities. So perhaps we should just add that additional matter as to confusion of roles and responsibilities, because that also contributed to the failure of the board as well as previous boards.
Yeah, we can add that, but once again, I think there was somewhere we spoke about separation of powers and responsibilities. Somebody mentioned it earlier on, but you're just emphasizing what somebody said. You'll be the absolute last, Ms. Van Damme, and you promised me you only had 1 minute, isn't it?
1 minute. As my usual obsession with the law, under, we said we were going to be quite firm with people that misled us as a committee. So under 13.81, can we just say that we're in instances where information was contradictory, resulting in possible perjury, perjury would be in violation of the Powers and Privileges Act, and I will include
the relevant section in my notes.
Right. No. See, now there's brainwaves. We say she'll be the absolute last. Just from an education, because they keep on asking us this question, and you'll assist all of us, because all of us are going to ask this question. You know, somebody has always said to me, Smith, you guys keep on saying that Red is guilty of perjury, what happens? You are saying to me the powers and privileges would apply even to non-parliamentarians. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, no, I'm just saying this from an educational point of view, because I think it's interesting. We can't say we'll throw the book at you, and when somebody says, how does that book look like? It's a common criminal, common law project. Okay, so I'm saying the point that Van Damme is making of powers and privilege. I'm just asking that question, because if it's already catered for in common law, then it's fine. Or if you're saying the powers and privileges just strengthens the common law, then it's also okay. So you agree that it's...
I mean, the Criminal Procedure Act deals with perjury in general, but powers and privileges deal specifically with Parliament. And it doesn't only apply to members of Parliament. It applies. The section I refer to, for example, is 17.2, which says that any person... who, whether or not during examination, willfully furnishes a house or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading, commits an offence and is liable to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years, or both fine and imprisonment. So it applies to any person, not just members of Parliament.
So you'll just give us that you've got it. The section in the powers and privileges, and we'll say it's covered both in powers and privileges and in common law. That's fine. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, Chairperson, I just want to correct something. The common law actually is normally applicable to courts, so the Powers and Privileges Act gives that additional power to Parliament. But in terms of the Constitution, those would be ordinary witnesses. Members of Parliament have the normal privilege in terms of the Constitution.
Okay. No, that's fine. We'll add it there. I mean, these people that are cleverer than me and most people except Swartz will tighten it up even before it goes anywhere else.
Chair? On the
no,
point of someone's...
Hold on, I'll allow you, but... We thought Van Damme, no, it's fine, all right, Baba, you'll be... All right, so you see, that's why when I take a decision and then people mess us up, then I open myself up, but it'll be you and then Chauke, you'll be the absolute last one.
Chair, one of the witnesses that came and gave evidence about 100 million rand improper expenditure, when the minister came and said that witness will now be charged in terms of the Corruption Act, and that obviously we need to make sure that we emphasize that witnesses cannot be charged for what they said in this House because they are protected. And that's the whole reason why, and I just wanted to allude to that. That is an important point as well. Because
okay.
That witness gave evidence here, and that witness is protected.
All right. That's important because it's not only about... Parliament is not an end in itself. This is also public education to the people who are watching us now that, in fact, there is protection if you're here. So you can't threaten somebody who said something in here, especially under oath somewhere else. There's another one for public consumption that, in fact, perjury is implementable, or the guilt of perjury is implementable. As per the education we received from Van Damme and our legal team. Thank you very much, and you, Honorable Chauke, will be the very last.
Now, Chair, the individual cannot be protected once they've issued summons. I think throughout our deliberations, observation, Chair, it's clear that certain documents that we have requested, they have not been forthcoming. And therefore, I think it's something that... before we finalize the process, especially on the company secretary that we have mandated through summons, we'll have to deal with that part, Chair. That will be the first action that we must take, failure to comply with summons. So I think the legal team will have to look at that so that we begin
to enforce that particular area of compliance. Complying with Parliament and its work. Thank you.
All right. We're going to go for lunch until 1:30, 1:25 to 2 at the absolute latest. To the legal team, and nobody mentioned it here, maybe you implied, but you didn't mention it as honourable members. From where I was sitting, there was consistent bad advice given to the chairperson of the board or to the secretary of the board. If you take this last point, they didn't come and say they don't want it. On a letterhead of an attorney, it said these are sensitive documents. Now, none of you raised it. I need the legal team to look at it. At least in three, I forget the name of those. I think it's Sekiso or somebody. I don't remember. I need you guys to come back by the time we meet on Tuesday, to be able to say to this committee, what is it that we can do legally to a law firm who, on their letterhead, made statements that these are commercially sensitive documents. The minister comes and says, in fact, they're not. In other words, it can't be just bad legal advice. Was it complicit? And those type of things. And specifically, that lawyer, because I think we have evidence of three letters on the lawyer's letterhead where they were obstructionists. So I'd need you to come and give us some advice on it, because I made an undertaking that, I think my words at the time was, they owe Parliament big time. It's payback time. We'll break for lunch and we'll come back at the absolute latest at 1:55. At 1:55, and we'll get straight into our recommendations. I did mention to all members, if you've made travel arrangements for anything before 6 o'clock, use these 45 minutes to change that, because it's not going to happen. Before you leave?
Yeah.
All right, no, I was just getting education. We are back here at 1:55. All right. I think there's the normal arrangement. Yeah, thanks.
William?
Yes, you may.